Good morning. The Committee of Higher Education and Workforce Development Division will be in order. Today's date is Tuesday, December 10th. So first of all, I want to thank all of you who are here today, gathered to talk about this very important subject. And I would start by just welcoming a couple of my colleagues. Many other of our colleagues are expected to be here, and you know, because this was a hearing that was not expected to happen, we do, as interim legislators, juggle many different things, but colleagues will be coming in and out. But I do want to recognize and appreciate the senators who are here, who are actually not on higher ed, but are people who represent the metro communities. So before we go any further, if each of them could say hello and introduce themselves and where they represent and their interest in being here today.
Thank you, Chair Bonhoff. My name is Scott Dibble. I'm a state senator in Minneapolis. I represent what's known as District 61, which probably doesn't mean anything. Those are the neighborhoods of Southwest and downtown Minneapolis. I don't touch the university itself, but I do have MCTC and the St. Thomas campus and Dunwoody in my district. Also pertaining to the university specifically, maybe I rival Senator Dietzick, but I'm guessing I have a close second, if not more, students, faculty, employees, and alumni in my district. So whenever the university wants something, I get a lot of emails.
Very good. Well, thank you for your service in that way, Senator Dibble. Senator Dietzick. And Senator Dietzick and I have actually worked closely together partnering on this issue and in putting together what we'll be hearing before us today. So Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Carrie Dietzick. I represent Senate District 60, which is the University of Minnesota Minneapolis campus. I also have Augsburg, and in the area, St. Kate's actually has, I believe, a nursing school there, too. So I have lots of college students, lots of alumni, lots of professors, and then I represent the neighborhoods around the U. And so we've actually been monitoring crime for as long as I've been at this job. So.
Yes, thank you. And so, you know, as you can see, we have many uniformed people in our midst today who will be coming forward and sharing about the work that they're doing. But before we begin, I just wanted to say a few words on the purpose and intent of this hearing. And obviously, we are all aware of the recent wave of crime that we have experienced in our metro campuses over the past few months. And as we'll hear, this isn't actually a new phenomenon, that unfortunately our metro higher ed institutions have had to deal with this issue for years. Students fall prey to those with criminal intent. They recognize that students on campuses are often unsuspecting and more often than not carrying expensive items such as laptops and iPhones. What is new, however, and deeply disturbing is the boldness with which criminals are carrying out these acts. An armed robbery in Anderson Hall, attempted kidnappings, and even rape. These acts are horrendous, unconscionable, and must be addressed. Our students should have no doubt about their safety when walking to and from class. There are several reasons we called for this hearing. We want our students and their families to know that we do have safety measures that our law enforcement agencies are taking to keep them safe. These are our experts in the field, and they work tirelessly every day to protect our students and our communities. In turn, we want our law enforcement to hear from our students about their perception of these crimes and how it disrupts what should be a safe learning environment. We also want different agencies to share best practices with one another. Certain campuses have been very successful in combating crime. What are they doing? Why is this? What is working? What isn't? What are our obstacles, and what can we do to remove them? We are not here to instill fear. Rather, we are here to combat it. We are here because we are a community, and we have a moral obligation to keep each other safe. Students, this means you must take responsibility for yourself and your friends, particularly during the weekend. Law enforcement officials, this means you must encourage collaboration amongst one another and set aside any pre-existing turf constraints for the sake of our students. No one single person or group is to blame for the crime that we have seen, but we all have a responsibility to address it. If we are going to successfully combat this issue, we must be united in our efforts. We must recognize that our mission is the same, and we must learn and work with one another in order to overcome. Minnesota is a national leader in education. We have incredibly bright students, well-run institutions that produce one of the strongest workforces in the world. And we will not let criminals disrupt this tradition. Together, as a united front, we will prevail. And that is really why we are here today. And so with no further ado, I will begin to call on those who both have taken an oath to serve and protect our community. We'll hear from leaders from our institutions, whether it be MinSCU, the University of Minnesota, or our private colleges. And very importantly, we're going to hear from our students today. And so the comments will be on the record. Those who aren't able to hear this testimony will be able to listen to the tape. What I would ask people to listen for as you're here is, what can we learn that could, not having come here today, be a difference maker? How can we hear what's going on in these various places and learn from it to be stronger having been here this morning? So with that, we've been asked to start with Sheriff Stanek, who has a constraint this morning with regard to his schedule. So please, Sheriff Stanek, thank you for being here, and we look forward to hearing from you today.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for having me here this morning. My name is Rich Stanek, and I'm the Sheriff of Hennepin County. Madam Chair, your words ring true in terms of what you said and how you described, I think, both the some of the concerns here locally as well as what we've seen across the country on college campuses and neighborhoods with respect to crime. I want to thank you and your colleagues for holding this hearing here today to discuss security concerns on all of our metro area campuses. And as you may know, the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office has countywide jurisdiction. We work closely each and every day with our local law enforcement partners to combat violent crime across this county. Now, there are more than a dozen campuses alone in Hennepin County, including universities and private colleges, technical and trade schools, and, of course, community colleges. I graduated from the University of Minnesota. I lived in off-campus housing not far from where some of these recent events have taken place. Now, we know crime doesn't stop at the border of one county or city or even one college campus. Those who want to prey on victims will go to where the targets are, as you said earlier, Madam Chair. Nationwide, there's been a dramatic increase in street-level robberies. Much of that increase is attributed to emerging technology, smartphones and tablets. What we call apple picking, this is an iPhone, we call it apple picking, you see it all the time, is the phrase that has been coined that refers to robbery of iPhones, iPads, or other smart devices. These robberies have become a low-risk but a high-payoff crime in the eyes of the offenders. These criminals are generally young adults or juveniles working in a pack. Now, they'll find someone walking or standing alone. They'll be using their iPhone to send a text, maybe post on Facebook, and they'll attempt to take it by force. Once they obtain the device, they don't keep it for their own use. Within a very short time, what we find is that the phone is sold for somewhere in the range of $200 to $400, easy cash. You compare that risk-reward ratio to the most recent bank robbery we had in Hennepin County, where the suspect got out with about $250 cash. Now, in that case, that $250 cash is the reward for the bad person. However, the potential risk is a federal crime with 10 years in prison. It's one of the reasons why we're seeing such an uptick, I believe, in some of these street-level robberies. In the city of Minneapolis, comparing third quarter 2012 to third quarter 2013, we've seen a 12% increase in robbery. But that is also consistent with what we've seen across the rest of Hennepin County, with a 12% increase during that same time period this year compared to last year. This statistic mirrors what we're seeing in other urban areas across the country as well. I think over the last 12 months, New York City has seen a significant impact on the robbery statistics due to the same apple-picking trend. Apple pickers seek out urban areas where there's a lot of foot traffic, places where they can get in and out quickly, and where they have a lot of potential victims. Urban college campuses fit this model. What can we do about it? I think the answer is threefold. One is information sharing is absolutely critical. Law enforcement must continue to work together and share information. Yesterday afternoon, the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office hosted a meeting with investigators from Minneapolis Police and MedTransit, Anoka County Sheriff's Office, Fridley Police, and the University of Minnesota Police Department to compare what we might know about these crime trends, identify potential suspects, and determine how best to focus our resources to address this crime trend. Secondly, of course, is increased patrols. And due to crime trends occurring over the past few weeks, I've assigned four deputies from the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office to work a dedicated patrol near the University of Minnesota campus every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night until 5 a.m. Similar to the dedicated patrol presence we have in the downtown entertainment district during the summer months, this increased patrol presence deters crime. Third, Madam Chair and members, is personal safety. I think it's really important for everyone to remember, not just the students on campus, that you have responsibility for your own personal safety. Just like you put on a seatbelt when you get in a car or look both ways before you cross the street, people should keep in mind a few things. First, don't be an easy target. Don't walk alone at night. Just like you wouldn't walk with your wallet in your hands for all to see, don't walk carrying your iPhone. Keep it out of sight in a pocket or in a bag. And if someone tries to take your phone, give it to them. Your phone is not worth your personal safety. Madam Chair, members, no easy solutions to what you're going to be discussing here this morning. I know you're going to hear from a lot of members, both students as well as others who have a vested interest in what happens in this community. I think that my comments reflect generally what I have seen over the last several months, but also a lot of years of experience working with our law enforcement partners. Madam Chair, members, please understand that law enforcement's relationship between us, the University of Minnesota, St. Paul Police, Ramsey County, MedTransit, Minneapolis, is very strong. We meet on a very regular basis. We work in tandem in order to curtail crime. We have different lines of boundaries or lines of demarcation in terms of our jurisdiction, but that does not prevent us from working together. In fact, you'll find just the opposite, I think, in the testimony here this morning. Thank you very much.
Sheriff Stanek, thank you very much. And in particular, I appreciate that you have put those extra uniformed police in the area that we've seen the most crime offenses happening. So can you just share with the committee what happened? Did somebody ask you to do that? How does that happen?
Sure. Madam Chair, members, the Sheriff's Office has countywide jurisdiction, so we work with our law enforcement partners every day. We look at the same crime trends that the individual cities, or in this case, University of Minnesota, looks at. In particular, though, he was my deputy chief when I worked in Minneapolis, but Chief Hessness, in his own right, did a very nice job. You know, he wasn't hesitant to pick up the phone, ask for additional resources. This is what happens day in and day out across my county, across Ramsey County. We're very appreciative of that. Again, our officers and our deputies work hand-in-hand for the general public, the students, the faculties, the folks who get a chance to see this morning. They should know that law enforcement public safety services are seamless. Shouldn't matter what color uniform you wear, whether it's white like mine or brown like Deputy Myrie's or light blue like Minneapolis or dark blue like MedTransit or brown like Ramsey County or dark blue like St. Paul. We're all of the same color at the end of the day in terms of performing our services and public service back out to the residents and students.
Thank you very much. Yes, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chief Stanek, apple picking, does that refer to the fact that this is typically an apple product, or does it refer to how easy it is to pick apples? The reason I ask is, or is it both? The reason I ask is because I've seen this or kind of was in the presence of this phenomenon once on LRT. I was actually busy buried with my nose in my iPhone, and all of a sudden I heard a guy cry out, "Hey, that's my phone." And all of a sudden there was this blur of folks running off the train. Clearly what had happened was his phone just simply got plucked out of his hand, and the guy dashed off the train, and boom, we were gone. So what is the term in reference to, and what kind of numbers are we seeing exactly in terms of that kind of plucking the phone or the iPad out of people's hands while they're not paying attention to their surroundings?
Sure. Madam Chair, members, great question. I mean, apple picking is not a term that I coined. Mm-hmm. We picked up on it on a national basis, but I think you yourself have seen it, and I think other members of the committee and members of the public know what we're talking about visually. All the time you see folks walking down the street, down the corridor, even the halls of the great Capitol. They'll be looking at their iPhone. They'll be paying attention. They're distracted. Now, we tell people, look, you're responsible for your own personal safety. Pay attention to your physical surroundings. as well as what's happening in and around you immediately. In terms of the numbers, you know, we are distraught that crime in the county, particularly in the area of robberies, is up 12% this quarter, 2013, versus this quarter, 2012. But then again, we're also pleased to see that there's been a 38% decrease in violent crime across the county as a whole, including the inner city, over the last 6 years. And so while this may be a trend or a blip, we work hard in terms of our resources to try and curtail it. We push our resources to where we need to in order to try and get a handle on it, and I think that's what you're seeing here over the last several weeks. We're hoping that it comes to an end. I know that there have been a number of arrests made. I'm sure that the U of M and or Minneapolis will talk about that particular piece of it. But I think, you know, the committee should take comfort knowing, number one, that law enforcement is working together across the board seamlessly. Two, that the numbers we're seeing are not out of line with what we're seeing both across the county as a whole as well as across this country.
Senator Dietzek, Senator Dietzek, I do want to welcome Senator Torres Ray. If you just want to introduce yourself and where you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Patricia Torres Ray, and I represent Southeast Minneapolis and part of Richfield, that is District 63 in the Minnesota Senate.
Thank you. Senator Dietzek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regarding this apple picking, so I do have some numbers and some research that I did. FCC says that approximately 40% of thefts in major American cities involve cell phones, and this is an increase. And the several stories that I was reading talk about that college students are actually, if they're looking and people are looking to quickly grab these phones and run or grab laptops, they have become targets more than they have in the past because, you know, who has phones? College students usually have phones and laptops. I've also done some research and have talked to our staff, so I'll just share this with everybody. And I've talked to the police on this, that to find out what rules we have so that, you know, we have rules on copper, so you can't just go. We had a little uptick in copper crimes where people were stealing copper out of the houses. And so we kind of tweaked some of the laws to make it a little harder. And so I've asked our staff here, and we're looking into what can we do so that it's not as easy to just take these phones and drop them in kiosks. And are the kiosks actually doing what they say they're doing as far as getting that information when you drop that off, so you can't necessarily take that stolen phone? And then there's actually federal legislation right now, and you know, who knows if they'll actually do anything, but there is actually federal legislation looking at making it a federal crime to alter the identification number on that phone. So they are looking at doing some stuff in the federal level, and locally I've asked here what we can do to make it a little harder and maybe the black market a little less lucrative for the criminals.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, if I may, just real quick, this isn't mine. Somebody left this here, so I'm going to pick it up. But I'm going to return it at the end of the day. That's different. Whose is this? Oh, that's yours. Is this recording? Hello?
It's recording.
Oh, all right. Anyway, Senator Dietzek is right. You know, there's a number of ways to attack the problem. If you're looking at what is apple picking, that may just be one reason why this is occurring, that we're seeing these increases. Law enforcement, the national associations, national sheriffs, international association chiefs of police, and others are working with both federally as well as with the providers to ask them to please disable these phones when they're reported stolen. The problem is, like I said, it's, you know, $100, $200, $300, $400 that folks can turn around and sell these fairly quickly. That is a problem for us. We have been working on this for well over a year with the cell phone providers across this country. We have not made any headway. We will continue to. Hearings like this, crime increases like this, both locally as well as across this country, help make an impact. But people shouldn't have to suffer and be victims of crime before common sense things happen. And one of them is that when these are reported stolen, be able to shut them off so there is not a black market to resell them. Pure and simple.
Thank you very much. Okay, next is Ramsey County. John Kirkwood, the chief deputy from the Ramsey County Sheriff's Office.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I want to thank you for this opportunity to speak on this very important topic of crime and security concerns on our campuses. My name is John Kirkwood, and I'm the chief deputy with the Ramsey County Sheriff's Office. taking a little bit different approach as opposed to some of the street level type crimes that do occur on the campuses. We have three campuses within our patrol jurisdiction. Century College, which is actually White Bear, and Matamida, it's a shared jurisdiction with Washington County and Ramsey County, as well as Bethel University, which falls within Arden Hills, one of our patrol cities, and University of Northwestern, which is, again, a shared campus between our Roseville partners and Vadnais Heights. I'm sorry, Arden Hills. And rather than, though we've had somewhat of a little bit of an uptick of some of the property crimes on those campuses, they're relatively small. We have not, fortunately, had quite the problem of some of the other campuses in terms of some of the violent crime. But we have seen more and more of the items, the technology-type items being taken in different ways on those campuses. But one of the things we've done to help enhance our relations with the college campuses, and as Senator, as you mentioned earlier, one of the important things is those collaborations, is that we, in recent years, in the past year, the Sheriff's Office has participated and helped organize three active shooter and emergency response exercises, one at each one of these colleges. Century College in October of 2012, Bethel University this last August, and then most recently we did one at University of Northwestern in October of 2013. These exercises provide us some just outstanding and invaluable outcomes. Probably some of the more important ones related to our emergency responders becoming more familiar with those college campuses in the event of an emergency, the overcoming of some of the multi-agency communication issues that we face from time to time because of our different radio frequencies in our dispatch centers. For instance, the University of Northwestern, we invited our partners from Metro Transit Police, and until we got the exercise up and running, we didn't realize we were really dispatching or talking to two different dispatchers. And through a simple fix through our dispatcher, through what we call a patch, we were able to communicate directly to them rather than them having to go back and forth and play kind of telephone tag between dispatchers and the other units on the ground. Some of the other benefits as a result of this training, it gave us an opportunity for our personnel to familiarize themselves better with some of our emergency operations equipment, some of our tactical equipment, tactical gear, gas masks, some other things that they don't typically use, as well as vehicles such as the mobile command post, that mobile command center that the Ramsey County Emergency Management provides to us. It also provided us more familiarity with something that we probably don't do enough in law enforcement, and that's training in what we call unified command and incident command structure. It gave us an opportunity as different agencies to work together, share those best practices, but also be in one set command post to make sure the situational awareness and the information was being exchanged through all the agencies, as well as our campus partners who we had also in the command post with us. Probably the most important takeaway from this, these three exercises that we conducted with Century, Bethel, and University of Northwestern, was an opportunity for the campus officials and security personnel to collaborate with local public law enforcement and public safety and see how we do indeed perform our duties and how we react in these emergency situations. And working together in these types of exercises, it will help us create a safer environment for our students and staff in the future. Although these training exercises and experiences are critical to our success, such as in the event of a major event on campus, they've revealed another important outcome. The ongoing relationships created, as I mentioned earlier, by bringing together the Sheriff's Office, emergency management, local police, and fire departments with the school administration and the campus security is absolutely invaluable. We've established strong relationships through these shared training exercises that will carry for years to come. Strengthening these relationships has a side benefit of deepening the dialogue between the schools, public safety, students, and staff. Because these relationships are better and the communication has been enhanced, schools are much safer and much more comfortable in contacting their local law enforcement officials and reporting crimes or security concerns. We've helped bridge that gap from before where they kept things pretty much on campus. They've now gotten so much better at bringing law enforcement in on the front end to help with some preventative measures in terms of crime prevention, orientating new students when they enter college as to just being aware of their environment, being safe on campus, and also identifying other issues on campus that create safety and security hazards. This has allowed law enforcement to get a jump start on identifying issues, working with the schools and the security to craft appropriate strategies to reduce crime and create safer environments for the students and staff of the schools. Our success in performing these exercises is important to the Ramsey County Sheriff's Office and our partners, and we'd like to continue providing them on a regular basis. Just to touch on the exercises that we conducted, to give you an idea again of that important word of collaboration and partnerships, the Century College exercise that we conducted was along with not only Ramsey County Sheriff's Office, but Washington County Sheriff's Office, White Bear Lake PD, Century College Public Safety, the Matamide Fire and Maplewood Fire Departments, Washington County and Ramsey County Emergency Management and Homeland Security. And then we had over 100 student and faculty volunteers that helped us conduct this on a Sunday afternoon. With Bethel University, the same thing. Again, we couldn't have done it without our partners. Ramsey County joined forces with Roseville PD, New Brighton PD, Bethel University Public Safety, Alina, Lake Joe Fire, Lake Johanna Fire, and Ramsey County Emergency Management, again, to put together a team concept of responding to these critical incidents in the event that it really happens in the future. At the University of Northwestern, once again, we partnered with Roseville PD. As I mentioned, the campus is literally separated down the middle. We have the dorm side, and they have the administrative side. There's a big rock as you drive into the entrance, and that supposedly is the marker of where the county line is, or the city line between Arden Hills and Roseville. And again, with Roseville PD, New Brighton PD, Metro Transit, as well as some of our fire safety partners, we were able to pull off these exercises. They were very successful, had some excellent comeaways as to best practices for the future. But more importantly, we established some bonds and relationships with those schools that we probably didn't have before, that we know now they're comfortable in talking to us, reporting to us different crime trends and other issues that they may have, and eliciting our support in the future for crime prevention steps and measures that we can take. Finally, as a father, two college-age daughters myself and two schools out of state, I feel what these students are going through. I feel what their families are going through. I have the same worries and concerns, and I know that through good, strong collaborations between the schools, between the public, and, of course, the public safety partners, we can create a safer environment for all of the students and staff on these campuses. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Chief. And I was struck by, when I had an early conversation with you and Sheriff Bostrom, just the depth of your commitment to this partnership and collaboration, and the difference that it really can make when something does go wrong. Because when you've established that bond and that trust, then there, you know, you just go right in there and you can get to work in a way that's not possible without that. And so I think you have set a foundation for some important future work. And it is funny that, you know, first and foremost, we're here as parents. And so so that, I think it touches each of us knowing that these are our kids on these campuses. So thank you very much.
Absolutely, Senator. Thank you.
And we do have another of our colleagues has joined us. If you want to introduce yourself and where you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Eric Pratt. I represent Senate District 55, which is northern Scott County. So the communities of Shakopee, Prior Lake, and Jordan, as well as six townships.
Thank you. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
So next on our agenda, several folks from the city of Minneapolis have asked to testify. So we have, if they just want to come up together. Exactly. So we've got Diane Hofstad, the city council member, Don Samuels, council member, Christine Aronson, deputy police chief of the Minneapolis Police Department, and Ed Frizzell, deputy chief, Minneapolis Police Department. I don't see Diane Hofstad here, so she may or may not be here. Hello, Councilmember Samuels. And we know, Councilmember Samuels, that this is an issue that you have been fighting for years and have really been someone who has stood up and said, we are going to tackle this, and we are going to have zero tolerance for violent crime in our communities. And so when I saw your name on the list, I wasn't surprised, and I thank you for being here. So in terms of order, that's up. Do you want to, Councilmember Samuels, first, and
yes,
then
ma'am.
We'll hear from the police?
Yes, Madam Chair, good morning, and
morning.
Good morning to your committee, and thanks for having us and for being so deeply concerned about this important issue for our young people and our university and the reputation of our city.
Yes.
And we're very serious about it. To my left is Deputy Chief Frizzell, and he will, I think, be speaking second.
Yes.
And and then Deputy Chief Arneson will speak after that on some of the investigations taking place.
Right.
This is a serious issue, of course. We take it very seriously, and I think it's as important for us to say it's unacceptable. And that's where we start.
Right.
And we can't afford for our young people to be at risk. And it's bad enough when you're violating people's possessions, when you violate their bodies. Now you've really defied the humanity of our neighbors. And so we're going to put all of our resources within reason and all of our efforts to make sure this stops. And I'm pleased that the other agencies are here and have expressed what already exists as our commitment to work together to solve this problem.
And do let us know if there are things that we can do
yes.
with from the state perspective.
Great. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Well, I'm kind of just the introducer of these folks, but I just wanted to say that, as has been said, violent crime is down, and that doesn't matter to the person who is violently attacked.
Right.
So we don't want to say that as a way, as a response or an excuse, but just to lay the groundwork. And that the city is not evolving into some chaos.
No.
And but we do have this blip, and we are responding in kind. And I think you will hear today that we are responding in kind, and that the young people can be assured, and the university can be assured, that the city of Minneapolis and its Minneapolis Police Department is very aware of what's happening, and we are in the process of and have been increasing our efforts there. For sure, we were going to talk about the whole cell phone thing. That's basically, they're so small and so valuable, they've become almost like untethered jewelry.
Yeah.
And it's almost like carrying around a bunch of 20s in your hand, which we would never do. But since it's in fact a product, we lose a sense of just how accessible, how much we're waving around $200 or $400 in public among strangers, which is something we'd not normally do with our jewelry or our money. And so I think the culture of that has to shift, and there have been efforts across the country to do that. And certainly this gives us an opportunity to tell our young people and people everywhere that when you go to the bus stop or when you're walking alone or when you're passing strangers, just as the same way you clutch your purse or your pearls, that you clutch your cell phones and your small electronics, because they are, in fact, the target of the new wave of criminal activity. We've talked about this at the city quite a bit and wondered how we can communicate this to the public. And we've done a few things, but certainly this is an opportunity, again, to reinforce that message. Can't say it enough. And because the university community is such a vulnerable community, young people being very social, sometimes a little careless because they are a little naive about urban life or because they're a little bit inebriated, and so there's a vulnerability there that is making the university area a special lucrative and fruitful target for this kind of activity. And one of the concerns I have is that this becomes a gateway crime in the sense that it then opens up the reality of the vulnerability of the community to the predatory community. And so if a broken window, you can imagine, leads to crime, then poor security habits can also lead to crime because it just opens up possibilities for those who are criminally inclined. And so I don't think there is necessarily a disconnection between the two. And that's why it's important for us to address the small things so they don't grow into big things. But certainly in terms of the big things, and there are also things that young people can do. And I know that my team members here are going to go into that in some detail. So without further ado, let me introduce you to Deputy Chief Frizzell.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Councilman. Madam Chairman, committee members, I'm Deputy Chief Ed Frizzell of the Minneapolis Police Department. My duties encompass all five precincts, to include the second precinct that covers the southeast portion of the city that includes the University of Minnesota. I can echo the efforts as well as the comments that you have heard thus far in regards to the law enforcement issues that are taking place down there. The other law enforcement agencies that follow me will probably say the same thing. One thing that we do very well in the region is interoperability. Between the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, the University of Minnesota Police, the PD, as well as the Metro Transit Police, we provide a strong, persistent, and very visible presence throughout the southeast portion of the city. Now, with that being said, what does that look like? Just in the last 3 months, to include August 1st, which I'll call move-in day, that's where all the students are exposed to the University of Minnesota and a more urban lifestyle, in some cases, for the first time. We've had over 1,900 traffic stops, 1,100 directed patrol activities, 478 stops of suspicious persons, 304 stops of suspicious vehicles, over 1,100 patrol walkthroughs, 3,300 building walkthroughs, 430 footbeats, 48 business checks, and 56 field contacts. What that says is that we are working very well together. And we've added another essential piece to that combination, which is the leadership of the University of Minnesota and neighborhood residents all working together in partnership with local businesses to ensure that we are massing our resources in the areas that need it the most. Now, Minneapolis, over the last 15 years, has been very adept at looking at crime prevention patterns through predictive analysis. We call it Code 4 at the Minneapolis Police Department. It's based on the CompStat model out of New York of looking at the analysis of crimes that have been committed, arrests, the various law enforcement activities in the area, and frankly, it gives us the ability to put the appropriate amount of resources in the areas that they're needed most. Now, I have shared some of the density maps, and I could provide that to the committee at the conclusion of this, that shows exactly where those resources need to be placed. And in the in regards to the second precinct, they are one of our best precincts at being able to do that. To date, they have placed nearly 60% of their patrol resources in the Marcy Holmes, Dinkytown, University of Minnesota area. That is, again, in conjunction with the University of Minnesota. So they are placing quite a big emphasis on student safety and the residents in and around the University of Minnesota. Our suppression efforts have come in the form of details in which we utilize everything from bikes, plainclothes officers, beat officers, and our community response teams. And when we identify a particular trend, we apply the pressure at that area. I call it the proverbial crime balloon. When you squeeze that, it invariably is going to bubble out in another area. As an example, the last weekend, we experienced a 35% decrease in part one, or violent crimes in the area, based on the strong, persistent, and visible police presence that we put in that location. And as statistics will show, it bubbled out on another robbery a couple of miles to the east down on University. Now, one interesting fact to this, as we look at the demographics of the actual suspects that we have taken into custody in regards to robbery, I'll allude to four arrest incidents where there were 11 offenders documented. Four were from Minneapolis. Three were from St. Paul. One was from Robbinsdale, Ham Lake, Shakopee, Columbia Heights, and Eden Prairie. That just shows that there is a plethora of individuals that are highly mobile, and they're moving through the area. And to echo what Councilman Samuel said, these individuals have identified a source that they can easily access and potentially look for that high payoff electronic device. We have also, through our code 4 and or predictive analysis, identified several of these suspects that have been identified as suspects in other parts of the precincts, such as the uptown area or downtown. And that tells me that, again, these individuals are very mobile. They're able to jump in their cars and go to various areas and commit their criminal acts. Now, you can say that let's throw more police at this all the time. However, there are some instances that you cannot necessarily police your way out of the situation. And that's where we had an outstanding dialogue with members of the University of Minnesota's leadership, as well as, again, partnerships with community leaders and University of Minnesota Police, where we've identified that education, again, teaching these students that you don't walk down that dark alley at 3 o'clock in the morning with your cell phone out. True story. You do not leave in an unescorted area when your friends should be with you. Your friends should be helping you make good decisions, even if you may be slightly behind that curve. You want to look at everything from CSCR prevention techniques, security by environmental design, or specifically safety by environmental design. We use that quite effectively downtown when we've seen a similar uptick in the warehouse district a couple of summers ago. Those things look like more lighting. If you have substandard high lighting in and around the area, those areas become problematic. If you have overgrown shrubs that could conceal an individual that's there to do harm, cut it back. Provide call boxes that when you lose your cell phone, you have the ability to then call immediately for help. We've seen a trend where sometimes 911 is the second or third call that a victim makes. The first one may be when they get to their roommate. Then they may call their parent, and then their parent goes, hey, you need to call 911 and get a report. Because one thing that we are all very good at is responding to crimes in progress. If we get that information, you can pretty well count on the fact that we're going to get someone there with lights and sirens in a very short time. So that's just one scenario that we can look at. The third piece, and this is where I had my aha moment. The University of Minnesota is going through a transition right now, and I'll coin a phrase that is urbanization. Before, it was somewhat on an island on the outskirts of the metropolitan downtown area. But now, as you look around the campus, there is a considerable number of high-rises that are going up, yep. Some of which have already been booked out through 2015. They're going up in areas that traditionally did not house a lot of students, whereas they stayed potentially, you know, on campus in fraternities, sororities, or rental houses with friends. So it has essentially changed the demographic locations of the students in and around the University of Minnesota. I have paired that where the crimes are being committed, and I would submit to you, with that changing location of where individuals are living, they're changing the way they get to campus. They're probably not taking that same beaten path down university or around through the campus. They're taking other areas that present themselves as potential avenues of danger after 3 a.m. in the morning, again, back to the environmental safety design, lack of lighting. I myself rode through there at 2 o'clock last Friday and identified several dark areas in and around the dorms leading back and forth to where the kids on campus migrate back and forth between social activities and the such. So with that being said, we have put forth our best foot to work with all these areas, not only in crime suppression efforts, identifying the patterns, trends, and suspects, but also safety by environmental design. Thank you.
Thank you. And I do have some questions for you, Deputy Chief.
Yes.
Because, you know, while we talk about the University of Minnesota crime area, it really is in the surrounding communities, most of the crimes that have taken place. And so it falls within primarily the jurisdiction that you preside over. So with regard to the surrounding community, how many additional in uniform police officers have you added to that area in the last month?
Over the last month, we've had a crime strategy which specifically places uniform officers and squad cars in the designated areas. And those are upwards of 6 to 8 officers where the precinct inspectors held over the shift to do nothing but go to that area and provide that strong and persistent and visible police presence.
So do you feel as though that currently on the ground you have the numbers that you would need to do what Councilmember Samuel said? I think that he raised a very important point, that this gateway idea, that, you know, that we want to nip this in the bud. We want there to be a zero tolerance. We won't stand for it. We're going to put every bit of resource we have to stop it in its tracks. Do you think that today you have that kind of uniform presence on the ground?
At this point, I believe we do.
Okay. And then let me ask you a couple other questions. Do you have the structures in place whereby if during a time period you don't, that you have the kind of communication and freedom to move with the University of Minnesota Police so that they can augment your presence on the streets if needed? Is that something that is possible, or is that outside of the way that you currently operate?
No, it's just the opposite.
Okay.
Interoperability is the name of the day. When I talk about being able to speak with Chief Hessness or contact a member of the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, and we routinely share resources. We do it downtown. We do it in other areas of need, north side, south side. So it's just a matter of identifying the trends, which we have, and placing those additional resources. I also have contingency plans where I could bring different uniformed officer or plainclothes officers as a city resource to help augment anything that I would need to get the desired effect in that area.
And are you doing that?
I am.
Great. Okay. Well, good. Those are the kinds of questions we have, because we want to make sure. I know Chief Hessness, you know, obviously his 100% accountability is keeping those students safe, and so they may have personnel in places where you don't, because that's their whole world. And I just am asking the question, and I don't know the answer. Is it possible that there could be a more fluid way that you could work? And it sounds like you're saying that it is pretty fluid.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Any other questions? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions. The first was an acronym that was used, CSCR. What does that mean?
I'm sorry.
What does the acronym CSCR stand for?
Criminal sexual conduct rape.
Okay, thank you. Then on the other major front of which you spoke, I'm curious about the level of activity, and maybe Chief Hessness will be better positioned to answer this, and that's around doing the analysis of the physical environment, the environmental design. Is that an activity that's ongoing and an active basis, evaluating the bushes and the sight lines and that sort of thing? And if so, what level of activity has there been? So that's part one of the second question. Part two is, what level of activity has there been in terms of trying to educate young people and other members of the community about actions and activities that would keep themselves more safe? What is the level of activity? Similar in measurement to the level of patrols. Are we measuring and tracking that level of activity?
Yes, Senator. To answer your first question, I cannot speak specifically to what's happening on campus proper, but I can speak to the fact that we've utilized those type of techniques in the warehouse district. As an example, by putting in portable lighting and cameras through our Fusion Center downtown, we were able to decrease Part 1 crimes between the hours of 11 p.m. and 4 a.m. by nearly 47%. And again, that was just an example of what increased lighting could do to dissuade those that are down there for other purposes.
Are those Madam Chair, are those, I see those mobile units on wheels with the big standard on top. Is that what that is?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And we place those strategically. We don't do that haphazardly.
Okay.
We look at areas that need it. We light it up, and we get a camera going there, and again, they're highly mobile, and that's a part of our weekly analysis process where the inspectors then are able to say, I need that resource here because of that.
Deputy Chief Frizzell, have you done that in the Marcy Holmes neighborhood?
Yes. We have Great. Dedicated 3/4 of our cameras and lights in that area, and then the Inspector Week, who's the second precinct inspector, is doing due diligence to place those where they need to be placed. And to answer your second question, our crime prevention specialists are nothing short of outstanding out of the second precinct. They work almost seamlessly with our business partners. They routinely do door knocks and walk through the neighborhoods and get the opinion from those folks that live there as to what we could be doing better. And as a part of their function, they also educate anyone who's willing to ask, or at the various community meetings and on some on-campus activities, they give them the information necessary to be successful in that environment.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Dzyciak.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have some additional information that kind of goes to the questions that Senator Dibble was asking. We had a safety walk in the neighborhood starting at Van Cleve Park last Friday. The Minneapolis police were there. There was members of, I believe, the university police. We had university college students there. We had neighborhood people there. One of the issues that we did talk about was this safety by environmental design, and they literally walked the area, I'll admit. We got started a little later than we had originally planned, and so I had to leave and go to another event. So, you know, I was bummed not to be able to go out there and walk with them in that 25 below windshield. But they had a good group out walking, and that was one of the things that they were looking at, was literally having this joint discussion on, you know, they took some paths. They went down 15th and down A Street and some of the areas where students walk. And so they were literally pointing out where there was maybe could be some more lighting. I actually drove that way to my next event, and I found three streetlights that were out. And so I have talked to the neighborhood, and I know they were meeting at some point here to figure out if those are city lights or if they're Excel lights. And so, you know, the neighborhood has been doing this, and again, I've lived in this area for a while, and I've actually lived in these neighborhoods, and so crime and safety and the safety of students and the residents has been an ongoing discussion for, you know, quite a while. So this isn't new. So I want to just, you know, get that out there. We are always concerned about the safety of our residents. And I want to thank Councilmember Samuels, because he has made it a priority to make sure that all of the neighborhoods in Minneapolis are livable. And so, you know, this is, I appreciate this opportunity to have this discussion, because these are things that a lot of our neighborhoods in Minneapolis do on a regular basis. So we had that safety walk. And then another thing that the students were talking about, and the Youth Student Association was talking about, and we were talking with the police there, was, again, are there some videos? And I think Gopher TV is talking with somebody, and one of the police organizations in the Student Association, on doing a quick video to send out to students with just some safety tips. The police are talking about, again, you know, is there some videos out there right now that they can share with people via Twitter and Facebook on just, you know, safety tips? And it's just all about being aware of your surroundings. And this isn't just college students. This is everybody. You need to be aware of your surroundings. I mean, I hate to say it, but that's just the day we live in. With this apple picking, it is just so easy. You see people, you know, walking and texting all the time, or, you know, walking with headphones on, exercising and texting, and it's just not safe. And, you know, today when they can just come and, you know, take the cell phone, and unfortunately they're bringing guns sometimes to take that cell phone. So I think the students, and I want to thank the students, I know some are here, and those that came out to that walk on Friday night, again, in that 25 below windshield, because they were there, and so we had some really good conversations, because, and a lot of this, I think, from some of the students, it will be, it might sink in more if they hear from other students, here are some safety tips, and so that's why I think they are having some great conversations of what they can do, and they're actually also getting involved in the neighborhood and looking at, okay, so what can we do to help the neighborhood and make these neighborhoods safer. So it's a really joint discussion.
Thank you, Senator Dzyciak. I just wanted to also add, this past summer, one of the Senate staff, actually somebody who worked for me, was mugged and beaten and robbed. And so, you know, it is a violation that will always stay, obviously, with him, but with all of us who went through that healing and recovery process with him. And so it heightened our sense of injustice. And we talk about the Apple, whatever you call it, stealing the phones, but we're also, let us not forget, we're talking about violence against our victims and rape, you know, in some cases. So pretty shocking. Thank you very much. Yes.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Chris Arneson, I am the Deputy Chief of the Investigations Bureau. We follow up investigating these crimes after the street officers have either made an arrest or written a report on these crimes. So as you said in your opening statement, working in collaboration with our partners in law enforcement and campus security is our utmost priority here.
Yeah.
And I think it's the way that we are going to be successful. The Minneapolis Police Department does have a long history of working in partnership with all of these college campuses, and I'm just going to list a few here. Augsburg, St. Kate's, the University of Minnesota, University of St. Thomas, MCTC, MCAD. So as you can tell, we have a lot of campuses in Minnesota that we have excellent working relationships with. One of the things we do for the precincts, the cops at the precincts, we have a dedicated liaison sergeant that focuses on the robberies in each of these precincts, and we do have one specific for the University of Minnesota area. Just a little bit about the investigations and a summary of those robberies in and around the university, and I'm talking specifically, and someone mentioned it earlier, very few of these are happening on the University of Minnesota campus. The majority of them are happening in Dinkytown and the Western Prospect Park neighborhood. So some of the common denominators for the victims, and this is not victim blaming, but the victim can do so much to stop some of these incidences from happening. A lot of times there's alcohol use involved. They're walking along sidewalks and alleys, very dark areas, late at night or early in the morning. And the loss of these cell phones then occurred during that time. So we're working very hard at the second precinct, and in fact, all of our precincts, to educate everyone on how to stay safe. Walk in groups. Try not to, you know, have so much alcohol on board. Walk in lighted areas. Don't walk in these dark alleys at night. Call someone. Let them know that you're leaving and when you will arrive. Okay, those are all safety issues that we teach to folks. So most of these robberies that we're discussing are not related to each other. Deputy Chief Frizzell talked about where our suspects are coming from, and these are the suspects that we have identified or have already arrested. And they're coming from all over the metro area, so we really do not have one group of people focusing in on the university. So working in cooperation with the University of Minnesota investigators, we were able to reunite a student with his stolen laptop that occurred on Essex and Ontario in the precinct. The University of Minnesota primary investigator who has the case was able to identify a suspect, but unfortunately in that case we do not have any arrests. We did arrest a suspect last week in a robbery that happened in the 5th precinct that we are able to relate back to two other robberies, one of them happening at or near the University of Minnesota. So that investigation continues. We did get a gun off that person, and we're waiting for DNA to come back from that. We were able to arrest one juvenile and one adult and charge them in a robbery that happened near the Super America at 29th and University, and a gun also was used in that case. That gun was a BB gun, but still, you know, the victim doesn't know that, and it's still a very frightening experience. So we are working diligently with the University of Minnesota investigators and all of our campus security people, comparing possible suspects, intelligence, and evidence. We look forward to continuing all of our campus partnerships in the future and are committed to making the university area and surrounding neighborhoods a very safe place.
Thank you for your service, and thank you, Deputy Chief, for your service. We are so grateful. Any other questions from the committee? Very good.
So,
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, just a question. When additional patrols are deployed into a given area, is the desired outcome to simply send a broader message to the, I think Councilmember Samuels used the expression predator community, that we're paying attention? Is that a preventative measure, or is it primarily a response measure so you can get there more quickly when incidents occur, or maybe even see incidences while they're occurring? Is a saturation patrol that effective, or is that too much to hope for, or is it all of those things?
Yes, we're very focused on results, and when we identify a hot spot, where there's a high potential for crime based on trends and patterns. When we place those resources in there, there's three things that I ask of each inspector, and they in turn ask of their people. We want to hear the strategy, and then we want to hear the tangible goal, and then the following week we look at the result of that particular strategy. And the inspector's feet are held to the fire as to gaining the desired result, which is zero crime. And we have achieved that in a few areas based on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I know Police Chief Harto is at a conference, and please express our appreciation for her leadership and for yours as well.
Will do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Now we're going to move to the City of St. Paul. And then we'll get to our colleges and our students. But it just, you know, you can tell by who's coming to the table here how important it is that the broad array of those folks who are here to protect and serve are able to work together. Yes. Commander Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the committee and staff. My name is Commander Ken Reed. I'm here representing Chief Thomas Smith, who is also away at a conference here this week. I would like to start out by saying, as everyone knows here, St. Paul is a neighborhood-based city, and we're fortunate to have seven colleges and universities in those neighborhoods, and they are truly neighborhood-based colleges and universities. And that's a good thing because it helps us, and we know that there's no clear demarcation between those neighborhoods and the educational institutions. So our officers are in and around them all the time as part of our geographic display of enforcing activities. We have long-standing, you're going to hear a lot of the same terminology you've heard from the last three presenters, but we have, our values are pride, professional, and partnerships. And partnerships are long-standing between the St. Paul Police Department and each of those seven colleges and universities, their public safety departments, their security departments. And that is nothing new. It's long-standing interactions over many, many, many years. Each institution has an officer assigned as a liaison, in addition to just the general patrol that's in and around those neighborhoods. Our Western District staff and Commander Bandemir is here today with me. They work directly with the college campus community and, in fact, meet monthly with the college public safety departments to share information, to understand what's going on from the perspective of the colleges and their campuses locations and their off-site teaching locations. And also, we share information. We have a program similar to what the deputy chief talked about in based on the CompStat model in New York. We have a similar technological, innovation, I guess, yeah, that we can look at our statistics and we can see those trends, and we share that information with the college Department of Public Safety staff and security officers as well. So that's a big benefit. Awareness, crime trends, we can move our resources to, just as you've heard from the other departments here. What affects the neighborhoods affects the campuses and vice versa. We know that. So what we've been seeing in terms of a lot of the talk this morning has been about the electronic devices and robberies. Our situation preliminarily, because some are still under investigation, some are not, and we won't have final reports until after the end of the year. But through November, our robbery situation is about on par with what it's been the last few years. Our theft situation, though, which is the same dynamic, it's electronic devices, cell phones, laptops, has gone up quite a bit. And that is, and the difference, just for purposes of clarification, is the use of force. Robbery would be a theft with force. Theft is just taking that, whether someone's attended to it or not. So theft from autos, where people leave their cell phones and their laptops in an unlocked automobile or visible in the passenger compartment. And that leads to one of the things that I think we spend a lot of time doing, and I don't know that we can ever do enough, because as we all know, each year
the student population changes on a college university campus, and doing the getting the message out about crime prevention, things to do, and we've mentioned a lot of different things here already this morning. Awareness, safety issues, don't leave things unlocked, don't leave things visibly attended, be aware of your surroundings. Those messages, we spend a lot of time working with our campus partners, but you can never do enough because of that changeover. And so that's something that we have to always keep in mind, that whether it's Twitter messages or Facebook messaging or crime alerts or public service announcements on the campuses, we have to continue to do that. Some of the things I mentioned, that we have the monthly meetings with campus security professionals. We also do those crime prevention projects, materials. We do have crime prevention through environmental design, which is what we've talked about, the safety through environmental analysis. We do have experts in that. They've been trained nationally. We've used them with college campuses to do some specific details, to look at some specific areas. They're always available to them, and we work with the campuses on that. Theft from autos, as I mentioned, theft is always a heightened problem with college campuses, and we do specific theft from auto details, whether that's plain clothes or undercover or uniform patrol, to try to address that, because oftentimes, as Sheriff Stanek mentioned, these are mobile criminals. What's happening out at Como Park could be happening on the campus of St. Catherine's College. So, you know, we try to tie that information together. The other things we've done, collaborative projects, a few years back on a date rape initiative where we actually worked with the college campuses and went to locations and bars and restaurants that are frequented by college students and helped educate them on things that they could do to help with that initiative. We actually did a crime prevention thing with the coasters in the bars and had a crime prevention message that so that everyone who entered into those establishments would get that message. We've worked with our partners, the Ramsey County Attorney's Office and Ramsey County Sexual Offense Services, to provide training to campus professionals on sexual assault protocols to help everyone in terms of awareness and what to do and how to respond to that so that it's appropriate for both the victim and the process. And I think that's pretty much covering it. Again, partnerships, we know our campus professionals, our public safety department leaders and representatives and our campus security staff. They work closely, since six of the seven are located in the Western District, they work closely with our Western District command staff and officers. That's the key to what we do. We are different from the University of Minnesota. We don't have our own licensed police agency as the U of M does. But nonetheless, and has been stated by everyone again, and I'm sorry I repeat everything here, we do work closely law enforcement together, whether it's the University of Minnesota Police Department, Minneapolis, St. Paul, the Sheriff's Offices, and the Metro Transit. That is longstanding tradition. It's built on trust and relationships that have stood the test of time, and it's not going to change. And where one is in need of additional resources or help in a particular area where our jurisdictions overlap, that happens without question. And you can count on that in the into the future as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here, and thank you for your service.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. Okay, University of Minnesota got joined with Vice President Wheelock, Police Chief Hessness, and Vice Provost Young. You all three want to come up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I'm Pam Wheelock, Vice President of University Services at the University of Minnesota, and with me today is our Police Chief, Greg Hessness, and our Vice Provost of Student Affairs, Danita Brown Young. We appreciate the time and attention you're spending on this particular issue, and it's one that we share a very important interest and concern with. But the reality is that the University of Minnesota is many things to many people. Not only are about 70,000 students enrolled in courses across our system's five campuses, but nearly 80,000 students, faculty, and staff are on our Twin Cities campuses almost every day. Even more, thousands come to the campuses each year to meet their health care needs or to attend an alumni event at the McNamara Center or to watch the women's Gopher hockey team win yet another NCAA hockey championship or to hear a Nobel laureate at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs or perhaps to watch their son or their daughter receive a degree in a spring commencement, and with that education walk away with one of the most important assets they'll hold in their life. And while commencement is always the goal, and it's a happy and celebratory day for the campus community, I don't think there's any time of year that we look forward to with as much eager anticipation as we do when the students return to campus in the fall. It's an incredible sight to see the cars lined around the blocks and volunteers loading those carts and helping the incoming freshman student or the returning student take their items to their new dorm room, their residence hall room, and to talk to the parents who are making that handoff and to hear a little bit about their aspirations for their son or daughter, to hope that they like their roommate, to hope that they do well in their classes, that they find a major, that they get into their program, that they successfully complete their degree in 4 years. But most importantly, that that individual, that that child of theirs be safe and happy in their career there at the University of Minnesota. To help them become an independent and self-sustaining individual and to be able to independently walk forward into a very complex world. We take that responsibility very seriously, and we're greatly concerned by either the perception or the reality that our campus home is not a safe one, whether it be for students, faculty, staff, or visitors. And if our professional responsibility weren't enough, in reality, many of us at the University of Minnesota have our own loved ones who are students at the University of Minnesota, including my own niece who lives on campus in her freshman year. But it's not just about whether our campus is safe or whether the dozens of public and private higher education institutions' campuses are safe in the Twin Cities area, but it's also whether our campuses themselves are in communities that are safe. The fact that our Twin Cities campuses are in the heart of a large urban area is definitely part of the appeal for our students and faculty. The opportunities that this metropolitan area presents is undeniably enhanced by the range of employers across all sectors here in the Twin Cities. They present internship opportunities, research partners, and ultimately employment opportunities. Almost two-thirds of our graduates stay in this region because of the incredible job opportunities. The amenities of the region for either natural spaces, recreation, services, cultural opportunities, entertainment, dining, shopping, that's all part of the appeal of the Twin Cities educational experience. But as we know, crime can be very mobile. And so we have watched with great interest not just what happens on our own campus, which has some remarkable improvements in safety over the years, but what's happening in the neighborhoods around our campuses. Not long ago, you heard about the commuter student driving in from their suburban home or maybe taking a bus. Now it's just as likely or more likely that you'll see them riding their bikes or walking from the surrounding neighborhoods to campus. Our first safety challenge, admittedly not the focus of this morning's discussion, is to make sure that the campus and the neighborhoods are actually safe for all modes of transportation, whether you walk, bike, ride a scooter, take a longboard, or actually drive a car. But this simple reality highlights the fact that the neighborhoods surrounding the campus are changing. For those of you familiar with those neighborhoods, perhaps from the years when you were a student at the U, you'll remember Marcy Homes is filled with single-family, owner-occupied homes, and a dinky town as a bastion of small independent retailers. Well, those times, they are changing. For the residential neighborhoods, most of those single-family homes in Marcy Homes have been converted to student rental housing. In fact, the east side of Marcy Homes has fewer than 10 owner-occupied homes in traditional single-family homes. That's a trend that's echoed to varying degrees in the Como neighborhood and even in parts of Prospect Park. That's complemented by an explosion of investment in apartment construction with about 7,000 units added in the last few years and another 7,000 or so under construction and expected to be ready for occupancy within about 18 months. In fact, since 2000, the apartment development in the area surrounding the University of Minnesota campuses has resulted in a 200% increase in estimated market value in the southeast Minneapolis neighborhoods, which is roughly double the rate for the city of Minneapolis as a whole for apartments. In Dinkytown, it's no longer just a neighborhood amenity, but a regional destination. It's attracting new investment, and its next evolution will look more dense and contain more housing units than it has in the past. The challenge that the university and the city of Minneapolis has is to understand if we are prepared for that increased density and the change in the mix of owner-occupied versus rental housing. While many of the issues of safety and livability are under the jurisdiction, if you will, of the city of Minneapolis, we at the university are deeply engaged because we understand that the neighborhoods surrounding the campuses are in many ways an extension of our campus. When a parent entrusts a child to us, or when a student lives in a housing unit near the campus, they don't care if there's a problem about who owns the property that it happened on. They care that they are safe while they're there in affiliation with the University of Minnesota. So we do our best to do just that, keep everything and everyone safe. And there has been much progress around that goal. Since 2004, the university has invested over $16 million in campus security. We have approximately 1,700 security cameras. We've added electronic building access to 158 buildings and have card readers access to 2,600 doors. We have 20 cold blue emergency phones located on our campuses and have recently hired 3 new officers, bringing our UMPD Twin Cities officer count to 50. And those 50 officers do a great job in keeping our campus community safe, facilitating a safe experience for our fans at our Big Ten athletic events or other major events on campus. But they don't only stay on campus. They spend about 30% of their time responding to calls, or about 30% of their calls are actually off-campus calls in the surrounding neighborhoods. We collaborate with the Minneapolis Police Department and share systems that allow us to coordinate responses based on location of event and proximity and availability of responders. We've asked for additional support from the mayor and the City Council of Minneapolis to increase their staffing and some of the equipment to support our needs in the areas, and particularly during the key weekend hours. Those investments have done a reasonably good job of keeping our campus community safe, with impressive reductions in certain crime statistics that are noteworthy. The question that recent events pose is, do those investments continue to be sufficient? The chief will share with you what we know about seasonal patterns of certain types of crime. We're being as aggressive as possible and using our resources not only to respond to issues, but to try to prevent the incidents of crime where possible. But the question remains about whether the combination of increased density and the change from owner-occupied to rental suggest a more fundamental reconsideration in the city's staffing level, in our staffing level, and in neighborhood investment strategies. Do these neighborhoods require different safety solutions than they did a decade ago? Are there key differences in the types of crime, whether it's the time of day, the prevalence of a presence of a weapon, or the occurrence of a physical assault, that suggests that some strategies need to be revisited? What keeps communities safe, though, is not just the presence of sworn officers, as important as that is, but the community members using good judgment about safety practices, working together to create safe environments, acting quickly to eliminate signs of neglect and blight, and identifying troubling patterns for police response. And we take seriously the need to inform our community about risks and to alert them of risks, and we do so in a way that does not suggest, or our efforts are to not suggest, any victim blaming or to increase any potential for racial profiling. We do this, yes, because we're required to do it under federal law, but we don't only do it because we're required. We believe that an informed community is a great asset, and we strive to be as transparent as possible in effective communication. We are working on our campus to finish converting building access from a manual process of locking and locking some of the remaining doors to an electronic access, and expect to have that completed by the end of the school year with an investment of $1.5 million. We're also analyzing where more cameras in public spaces would be warranted and where we can improve lighting and landscaping to create safer environments. We have a lot of lighting on campus. Some lighting is more effective than others, and there are still some spots where we think we can add more. We are a public institution with a public outreach mission, and we know that we need to be safe and accessible 24/7 for our students and our community. We can do this quickly because our investments are through our institution. It isn't subject to an assessment process for street improvements where we have to get a majority of property owners that concur, and so we're able to do it quickly, but it does raise questions about the speed with which those kinds of investments could be made in the surrounding neighborhood. Our campus environment is very porous. There's not a gate that runs around the campus. There's not a single point of entry or even a couple of points of entry that are easily patrolled. But we are a very public space for ourselves, for our visitors. So how do we create and promote safe spaces and still meet our public mission? We'll be spending more time to better understand and determine what kind of appropriate access each building on campus should have, who it should be accessible to, and when. And the public nature of our campus will only be amplified next year when we bring onto campus another light rail line. So the green line will be operational and will run through really the heart of campus starting late spring, early summer of next year. So that will be a great amenity for many who have need to access the campus community, and it will be convenient to bring others here as well. I want to join the chief in thanking the many others. I know he will bring this up in his comments, who have responded during these recent events. Of course, the city of Minneapolis, who patrols and secures these neighborhoods on a day-to-day basis, but also the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, who responded to our request for assistance during key evening hours, and most recently, Metro Transit and the State Patrol. And our partnerships on campus with the Office of Student Affairs, the Boynton Health Services staff, and the Housing and Residential Life staff, and our many student organizations to promote the health and well-being of our student population, and offering support and services to those who have tragically become a victim of crime. They are important partnerships to us and help us advance our goal. So thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd like to turn it over to Chief Hessness.
Vice President Wheelock, thank you. And I guess I would just say that your question about should the way we approach keeping our neighborhoods safe given the changing times, demographics, and density, I take as a rhetorical question, and that it appears apparent from your comments that you too believe that it is important to rethink our strategies in the face of the changing times.
Madam Chair, yes, well said. We do, and we've also raised that with the city of Minneapolis as well.
Thank you. And so we would ask that you keep us informed as time goes on if there are ways that we can assist in making some of those changes happen with velocity.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll take you up on that.
Thank you. And please, Chief Hessness, before you begin, I want you to know that your reputation precedes you, and that as I have had conversations with all of the different units that serve to augment and be in partnership with you, each person has taken the time to just tell me how much they respect you as an officer and the leadership that you provide. So thank you very much for your service to our community, to our students, and we welcome you here today.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dibble. Well,
that's certainly no surprise because Chief Hessness is a resident of Senate District 61.
And you take credit for that.
Well, thank you, Senator. Those are humbling remarks, and Senator Dibble has saved me the trouble of pointing out that he is my senator, so I appreciate that. To everybody, the committee, Senator Dietzick, Senator Torres, very great to meet you, and Senator Pratt as well. So thanks for the opportunity. And again, Greg Hessness, the university actually wear two hats. I'm the Assistant Vice President for Public Safety, and that's a system-wide responsibility of emergency management, central security, the lighting, the access control and surveillance, and our public safety emergency communication center. It's a 911 center, but also monitors all those services system-wide, coordinate campuses and research and outreach centers as well. But I also serve as a chief of police on the Twin Cities campus, and that's, as Vice President Wheelock mentioned, now a 50-officer department. It's been larger. It's been smaller. We're at 50 right now. Our primary jurisdiction are the campus properties that we own, operate, et cetera. Of course, that's in two counties and three cities and different parts of different cities, so it's pretty diffuse to begin with. And just to be clear, the UMPD is a sworn, post-certified law enforcement agency, and we've served since the legislature enabled us in 1947, so we've been around quite a while. And prior to my arrival at the university, I was with the Minneapolis Police Department for 28 years, the last 9 years as deputy chief. So I certainly understand all the decisions that go into resource deployment around the city and absolutely respect that. And I don't mean to be just the squeaky wheel, but I am kind of the squeaky wheel for Southeast Minneapolis, and appreciate their listening. So we do work hard together on mutual public safety objectives, and nothing illustrates that more than this fall. There were, including the two sexual assaults and the attempted abduction, there were a total of 28 violent crimes in the three fall months. Of those, only three were on campus, but you know, over 50% of the victims were students. So the mutual interest goes without saying, I would hope. So we've got a great relationship with MPD, and I don't expect that's ever going to waver. It's also important, I'd like to acknowledge the work MPD has done over the years. I think there's a slide that illustrates this. Without question, the city is much safer than 1995 when the New York Times decided we were best termed Murderapolis. That year, I believe that's something in the neighborhood of 45,000 Part 1 crimes. Last year, it was 23,000. So, you know, huge improvements. Nobody's ever satisfied with crime. We're certainly not satisfied with the trends this fall. But 1996, I actually brought my oldest child to live at the University of Minnesota campus in Comstock Hall, kind of right on the heels of the declaration of Murderapolis. So, you know, she'd done post-secondary options at the U. She was a city kid. But I can empathize with parental anxiety, dropping somebody else. I was kind of misty driving away for all of that. But she went on to have a great career undergrad in the med school. So we owe a lot to the University of Minnesota. Next, there's another slide Tim has for us. Closer to campus, looking at the similar trends. And these are, let me say first of all, at one point I was a robbery homicide detective, so I really watch these. These are the five neighborhoods around the university: Cedar Riverside, Como, Marcy, Prospect, the U of M district. And so I consider, it's not the most horrible thing that can happen, but I consider robbery the most likely serious personal crime that might well happen to one of our students. So I track this quite closely. As you can see, the 2005-2006 years were not good years. We've made great strides since then. You know, at the same time, I've been at the university now 10 years, and I can say it's not unusual to see an increase in the fall. And I track that quite closely. People have said, you know, the reasons are obvious. The weather's nice, students are new. You know, unlike working in a municipal agency, it's not like we, you know, make the connections with neighborhood associations and they stay there for a period of time. It's at least a quarter of our population is turning over every year. So as folks have said, new students are not necessarily sophisticated, not aware of the good and bad of a dense urban setting. The first blush of freedom, they don't really observe the clock very closely. So, you know, although we, you know, nowadays, of course, every, has been mentioned, every backpack has a laptop, every pocket has a smartphone. A lot's been said about, you know, walking around using your device, but right now, unfortunately, I think the presumption is that everybody's got one, whether you're displaying it or not at that point in time. So, and again, as others have said, easy to turn those around for quick cash. So following our trends, we know that between 2004 and this year, We saw in the fall months, we saw an average of 19 robberies in South Minneapolis neighborhoods, September, October, November. So this year we've seen 25 in the same time frame, 25 in the neighborhoods, 3 on campus. So, you know, while that may not be in some neighborhoods of the city, regrettably, you know, that may not be as noteworthy, but it's certainly noteworthy around campus. So the question I ask is, so why have you heard so much about this at the university? I think we've got a new slide there. We're also, like the uniform crime reporting of the Justice Department that all police agencies are subject to, we report up through the BCA in Minnesota. Campuses are also subject to the Jean Cleary Act of the Department of Education. And among the things we're required to do is to collect data and issue timely warnings to crimes that represent an ongoing threat. And that is not limited to campus. It's, you know, obviously these areas where not quite a commuter campus, but we're not quite a residential campus either. A lot of students in the neighborhoods. So in doing so, you know, we get that information out to students, but it also generates more anxiety than we'd like to see. We want people to be informed. We want them to be overly fearful. So, but this was an uptick this year. There's no question about it. And so in early October, when we started seeing some changes to the expected trend, you know, we knew a different response was needed. And so our university police officers since then have logged over 211 hours of overtime, and at a cost of about $15,000 just in sort of robbery suppression details. And that's been all run. You've heard the precincts talk about their community response teams. I have a small team I refer to as a coordinated response team. They do go out and work a lot of plain clothes on these things, but they also serve to coordinate the efforts of our patrol force, the city's patrol force, their undercover teams, and investigations as well. So we all have the same information or pulling in the same direction. Each week, you heard the Code 4 terms, CompStat Code 4, the Minneapolis version. We meet with the first and second precinct each week when they do their planning and really talk daily as necessary. So our CRT, our Coordinated Response Team, has made over 20 arrests of individuals this fall, including 3 other robbery cases and a number of weapons cases. So it's hard to claim credit for what really didn't happen, but I could give you chapter and verse a few examples of behaviors that they had witnessed undercover that were clearly targeting students. And again, it's been briefly mentioned, but I think it's worth stating explicitly, we are targeting behaviors. Unfortunately, this fall, a strong percentage of the suspects have been described as African American. We are not targeting people by their demographics, it's by their behaviors. They spend time to observe the behaviors so they have a legal basis for their stops, and they've done a very good job in Detroit Law Works. I just say Minnesota style hats off to those folks. So part of working intelligently is getting a better handle on trends and tendencies. So we just finished looking back at 3 years worth of robberies in the fall and discovered a few trends. First is that this year, in half of the robberies, criminals used a gun. That's easily the most unsettling trend. That has not always been true. There have been more use of physical force or just verbal threats, but this year more weapons were displayed. We've taken weapons. Some have been real. Many have not been real. But as has been mentioned, the moment of fear at that point, it's irrelevant. You know, people are should treat those as actual weapons. Secondly, criminals are typically sought out people walking alone the majority of the time. And while that's still true, they've expanded targets to include people walking in twos and threes. It's been mentioned that's bolder, and I certainly agree. They either assure that they have numbers to outnumber another group or display a weapon that sort of is trumps whether there are several people in a group. And that is a typical piece of advice we give our students, is not to be out alone. In fact, when we door knocked all of residential housing on the East Bank with the Minnesota Student Association, MSA was getting them to sign a pledge not to walk alone at night, not to let their friends walk home alone at night. And I think you'll hear some more from our vice provost, but that's what the Gopher Chauffeur is about in our escort service as well. So we hope that is fully utilized. So finally, and in the bigger picture hours here, we do know that the majority of these are, taking place in that window from 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. Sunday afternoon there was a case just off campus. So, you know, 4:30, yes, it's dusk at this time of year, but that was not what we would predict. So the diffusion, and we're watching that, is that diffusing as well, the hours we focus on. So finally, you know, looking back at the bigger picture, we've reviewed our records, and as my boss mentioned, sort of migrated to doing more and more work off campus. You know, the jurisdictional boundaries are, as we've said, fluid. Certainly, whether the students are on or off campus, I as a parent, you know, I've heard your parents from your district. They don't want to hear a lot about whose jurisdiction is. They just want to know we're all working together to the extent of our resources. And that's certainly our concern as well. There is undeniably sort of an opportunity cost here for us because we are not really on campus proper. And we're also not in St. Paul very much because that's been pretty peaceful and we haven't had too many trends going on there. But, you know, like the city, we have to prioritize where the greatest risk is at the moment, and student safety is always paramount for us. So lastly, just as others have said, I really want to thank the Sheriff's Office for helping us these last few weekends. They really stepped up with, you know, a force to support our marked units and, frankly, our undercover units. They're the ones that get called in to intervene when they're identifying predatory behaviors. And this past weekend as well, Metro Transit, the State Patrol, we noticed some of our bad guys are from St. Paul. We've been in consultation with the St. Paul Robbery Unit to learn what we can about them. So thanks for your time and glad to answer questions.
I just have a couple questions. Yes, thank you very much, Chief. Currently, do you have uniformed officers in the Dinkytown area, you know, on the beat patrolling?
In foot patrol, no. In marked units, yes. They described our CRT. They're spending their time in unmarked units in the neighborhoods during those hours. And the marked units are kind of on the fringe, ready to be, you know, visible in the entertainment district, but ready to come in if they need help stopping suspicious people.
And, Chief, do you think it would be helpful to have a presence of uniformed officers of yours patrolling those streets?
You know, as we've mentioned, about 30% of our call responses are, if you look at the second precinct, it's really a big piece of geography in the city of Minneapolis, but still it only, this year I think it had 13% of the crime in the city. So they're a thin crew, and they have, so for example, Sunday when we had that robbery, it was shift change for the second precinct, so we took the call.
And Madam Chair, if I could just add that, just to be clear, I think that the incidences are actually more dispersed than just the commercial district of Dinkytown. And so, you know, it's a little bit of a hit and miss about, you know, where do you need to be at what time to prevent something from occurring. But it appears that it's a bigger geography that needs some physical presence and improved lighting and all of the strategies, you know, mobile camera and lighting units, that it's not just the commercial district that we're focused on.
Go ahead.
Let's say one trend we did notice while, you know, a lot of the call load is in northeast Minneapolis, this fall 58% of the robberies had moved southeast. So,
and can you just say something about the megahertz situation? I've been told that the 800 megahertz communication devices are not something that the other universities can avail themselves of. Is it different with you?
Well, it is. I mean, because we're a sworn law enforcement agency, so we can use the public safety frequencies. I know downtown, for example, they have sort of a subset amongst the security forces that, you know, are in the Macy's and the towers downtown, so they have a connection to law enforcement through a channel. We don't have a lot of independent security units working campus businesses at the present time.
So you automatically have access to that because you're the sworn officers versus some of those other smaller campuses use private. That's why they can't. That's the situation?
That is the situation in Minneapolis. I don't know if there's a difference in St. Paul.
I think there is.
Okay.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you. Yeah, Senator Pratt, and also before I call on you, I just want to welcome Senator Peterson. Just introduce yourself and where you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize for being late. I did plan on being a little bit late, but not nearly as late as I was. I'm Senator Brandon Peterson from Northwest Sonoka County. represent Andover, Ramsey, Anoka, and Coon Rapids. So, and thank you, Madam Chair, for putting this on.
Yeah, thank you. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chief Hessness, fascinating that your chart shows, depending on the neighborhood, the same trend. When it goes up in Cedar Riverside, it goes up at the U of M. Robberies, when robberies drop, it drops across the board. How do you attribute the decline from 05 and 06? And what can we learn from that decline in the current situation?
Senator, Chair, you have an opinion about that. That was the nadir of staffing for the Minneapolis Police Department. I was responsible for the growth during Murderapolis, Clinton cop years, and peaked at 943 officers, and we kind of beat back some of those trends of being smarter policing and all the rest. That was kind of where they had bottomed out. I think they had bottomed out at 770 officers from 940, so they had a pretty big drop. And when that happens, you are more and more focusing on just being responsive to 911 calls rather than doing some of the CRT stuff, the proactive stuff, or the crime prevention stuff. Before they lost the officers, they lost a lot of their crime prevention specialists as well. So usually the cops are the last to go, but that was a low point for them.
And so what can we learn from that as we look at today's situation?
Let's
Chief?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Let me say that it does take a very long time to get cops on the street, from the decision to hire to processes to backgrounding through an academy or whatever the case may be. So be as anticipatory as possible and not let those numbers vary. You got to be pretty proactive to keep that on a level keel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Pratt. Thank you, Chief. Other questions? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chief Hessness. Just a few questions, and Vice President Wheelock may be able to answer them as well. Just a quick question on the reporting and tracking. Are you confined to reporting your numbers on a geographic basis, or do you report the numbers that your agency responds to? I'm just curious about where the numbers are coming from. They're coming from MPD or University of Minnesota Police?
So two big buckets of data. One is obviously crimes and incidents. You know, we have shared the city's records management system is CAPERS, has been, and we've been we're a beta test. We've used the same records management system since 1990. So, and we see each other's reports. We can make reports for the city, and we do. So that's the one big bucket where we know where the incidents are coming from. The other big bucket is CAD, the computer aided dispatch. That's all the police calls that go out. Some get a report, some, you know, or just an assist somebody, whatever the case may be. And since I've been there, we actually lease CAD from the city. So that means they can see our calls, we can see their calls, you know, we can switch them back and forth. We can take it, we can opt for it, they can ask us to take a call. And then we can do the research looking back what happened, what's been happening in that neighborhood in the last week, month, year, whatever the case may be.
Thanks. I have three questions.
Go ahead, Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Madam Chair. The second one is I'm still kind of trying to get a handle on what the picture is for this past fall. How much of what we're hearing about and experiencing is the quote lower level crimes of, you know, the plucking of the phones out of people's hands and that sort of thing? How much are there these more significantly more serious crimes of violence? Relatively speaking.
Yeah, Madam Chair. Actually, on campus this year, overall, we're down 21% in Part 1 crimes, and the second precinct is also down in Part 1 crimes. They have had an increase in robbery. Sometimes these phone snatches are just that. They snatch and run. Sometimes it's a threat or use of force or display of a weapon and becomes a robbery. So There was an uptick in the violent crime this fall. The run-of-the-mill larcenies, burglaries, even keel are down, but the ones we're most concerned about were up.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. And then how much, this is similar to the question I asked of Deputy Chief Frizzell. How much activity, I mean, Vice President Wheelock talked about the additional efforts going into securing doors and that sort of thing, but how much is going on in terms of evaluating the campus for environmental safety, design, lighting, and education activities?
So, Madam Chair, Senator Dimmo, maybe I'll take a shot at that and then ask the Chief to add a few more pieces of information. I would say in our campus master plan, one of our policies and guiding principles is around creating a safe environment, and so it is consistent with the work we do on a year-to-year, frankly, day-to-day basis. As we look at introducing projects, we think about access points, lighting, circulation. We are doing a concerted effort right now to really look at our lighting and landscaping on campus, and we've also reached out to our colleagues and partners at the City of Minneapolis, at the Department of Public Works, and the Minneapolis Police Department as well to help us evaluate around the surrounding neighborhoods. One of the challenges that we have is not all of the property that is perceived to be on the university campus is actually owned by the university. A case in point would be fraternities and sororities along University Avenue. That's actually privately owned property, and the lights are municipal. And so we really need to do this effectively, to do it in partnership with the City of Minneapolis. And it will be challenging in those neighborhoods because there is no special assessment district or service district that could move more expeditiously about funding improvements. So we have an open question about that. But we're moving quickly to see where our hotspots are about lighting, landscaping. And I'd like the Chief just to comment on a little bit more the addition of additional cameras, particularly with the introduction of the light rail line.
Okay, Madam Chair. And Chief, to that point, as earlier mentioned, there are 1,700 cameras on the Twin Cities campus. That's been an active project going back 12 years to the days of attacks on research, you may recall, that happened on campus. So we've buttoned up a lot of the buildings, the entrances, the residence halls. We were lacking to some degree in the public areas. So we've, among the three task forces my boss commissioned, one was when I'm chairing to look at our public area surveillance, and we've met and drafted a plan to do just that, to kind of develop a perimeter plan which will mesh with the city. For example, Cedar Riverside, they've got six public cameras on Cedar, Augsburg. So we'd like to kind of knit the whole area together, the business community and Dinkytown Stadium Village. So establish, get a good perimeter coverage, and then those formal and informal thoroughfares on and off campus. And certainly the light rail. We don't have surveillance on Washington Avenue now, but transit will have cameras on the platforms, and we'll want to be able to observe the comings and goings from campus from that point.
Well, Chief, you make sure and scream if there's anything that you see that's needed that's not there.
Yes,
Senator Dibble.
And then the second part of my question was how much activity is going on around public education, educating the students to keep themselves safe. But I'd like to wrap into that. The gopher chauffeur, what is that? How does it work?
I think the provost is going to speak about that.
Oh, okay, great. Then I'll defer.
Senator Peterson, and then Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question is for the Chief. I'm looking at the fair policing section, and forgive me if you've already shed some light on this. There's a reference to aggressive law enforcement and the stoppage of potential suspects that aren't issued a citation, which I'm sure is fairly commonplace. Could you just maybe dig into that and what that means to you in terms of aggressive law enforcement? And I'm not necessarily talking about the ramp up of staffing and that sort of thing. What is the difference between aggressive law enforcement and stopping someone on the side of the road and just regular law enforcement?
Yep. Well, in
Chief.
In this case, just maybe a couple illustrations is we know where it's been happening, kind of know the general groups are doing. So they're out there in plain clothes watching the groups moving through the neighborhoods. there are certain behaviors that you can say, yep, that's predatory, a group together, splitting up, following somebody, getting back together, that sort of thing. A couple examples, we had a couple individuals that were following two female students. Our officers are in their unmarked vehicle observing this. There's a car circling the block. A marked car happened by. They get called in. The car picks them up. Off they go. And they stopped them, and they had been involved in a gun incident earlier in northeast Minneapolis. Or they watch groups wandering around, looking at different groups of students, kind of aimless, and they finally settle down across from an ATM, watching people go to the ATM and come from the ATM for about 90 minutes, watching them. So finally they stopped this group. Identified them, you know, at least one had an arrest for his warrant, not from the area, no particular explanation of why they're there. So they have to develop reasonable suspicion to make a stop. It's not random. And the concern about profiling of a racial nature or anything else is openly discussed in detail. They've got to be able to justify their actions.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Chief. So you'd mentioned sort of walking around in groups. I'm imagining that that's not the only thing that you're concerned about, or that's not the only item amongst a set of items that would, you said that walking around or being congregated in a group could be deemed predatory behavior. I would imagine there are other things that that group is doing that leads them to be identified. It sounds like you're maybe stopping some of these groups, asking them for their identification, and then checking maybe your database, cross-referencing your database with their identification. What other sorts of things are these groups doing aside from being in a group?
Well, sure. Chief, I think I covered a couple of them. It's the following other ones, twos, threes of pedestrians, splitting up, getting back together, circling the block. One example is one individual looking into cars, looking in yards, looking in garages, stopped him, and he had a gun down his pants. So just behaviors that aren't, you're not socializing, you're not going to a destination. And again, it can be 90 minutes. It can be out there for long periods of time with no obvious good purpose, and some of these behaviors that we think are targeting victims.
Thank you.
Thank you. Vice Provost.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for having me here today to talk about this important topic. Excuse me as I am battling a cold. I am Danita Brown Young. I am the Vice Provost for Student Affairs and Dean of Students at the University of Minnesota. Student safety is extremely important to me, the Office for Student Affairs, and the University of Minnesota. We remind our students and our families that we are located in a large metropolitan area. But regardless of where our students live, we want to provide them tips on how to be safe, how to protect themselves, and how to protect their belongings. With the recent uptick of crimes, we have seen or heard from our students saying that they are uncomfortable living in the surrounding neighborhoods and are considering moving from Minneapolis. We have heard from some students and families that are unwilling to patronize business owners in the surrounding community after certain hours. Some current students are considering transferring from the institution, and some potential students are rethinking their admission to the U, and some potential families are reconsidering whether they should send their son or daughter to the university. As the Vice Provost for Student Affairs and Dean of Students, it is my responsibility to help educate, to help protect, and to help support our students. Since the beginning of Welcome Week and since the beginning of the academic school year, we have been sending email messages to students, parents, and families about safety education. We have been meeting with student organizations and student leaders about safety concerns, and we have been meeting with neighborhood associations, Minneapolis Police Department, and other City of Minneapolis departments to address these safety concerns. As we address these safety concerns together, we want our students to, one, utilize our campus resources. As Chief Hesnes had already spoke about the Gopher Chauffeur,
The Gopher Chauffeur is a free transportation service provided from our Boynton Health Services, and that service is provided on Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m., and students can get picked up and dropped off at residences on or near the university's East Bank, West Bank, and St. Paul campuses in Uptown Minneapolis. Since the beginning of the school year, we have seen an increase in the number of vans that we have transported our students, an increase in ridership, and we have also increased the days and the hours of operations for our students. We also have a security monitor program, which is affectionately known as 624 Walk. And that program is a free walking and biking security escort service from to and from campus locations in near adjacent neighborhoods. And that is open and available for all of our students, our staff, and our faculty and our visitors. And I personally have used that program, and I encourage not only our students, but I encourage my own staff members to utilize that service, particularly if they are going to be on campus at night and alone. Number two, we want our students to be informed. The university has a text messaging system called TextU, and it sends out alerts and emergency notifications. We strongly encourage all of our students and staff and faculty to sign up to receive these alerts and to know what those alerts mean. We also send crime prevention and safety tips in the undergraduate and the graduate email bulletins to all students on a biweekly basis. We expect our students to read that bulletin, read those tips, and to learn the information. Number three, we want our students to be aware and cautious. We encourage our students to pay attention, be aware of their surroundings, to walk with a buddy or a group, and we want them to keep their valuable items safe and secure. We also want them to know where the emergency phones are located on our campus and to know what type of resources are available to them in the neighborhood. And four, we want them to get involved, as you will hear from our very involved students a little bit later. We want our students to get involved with the neighborhood liaison program and their local neighborhood associations, as well as serve on various committees on our campus that address those safety concerns and issues. Get involved with the Minnesota Student Association. Particularly, they had a Street Smart pledge, and that pledge encouraged our students to never walk home alone, never let their friends walk home alone, and to always be aware of their surroundings and to never be an easy target. And finally, we want them to get involved with activities such as the Second Precinct, as they hosted the safety walk last Friday evening in the Marcy Holmes neighborhood. This safety walk invited all community members, students, rental property owners, business owners to walk around the neighborhood and learn how to identify potential risks, to identify suspicious activity, and that there are people who care about their neighborhoods and that they are watching and they will not hesitate to call 911 if there is an issue or a problem. These are just some of the examples of how we are working together to continue to do all that we can do to promote safety and to keep our students safe. So I do thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity and the time.
Thank you very much. And now we're going to look forward to hearing from your students. So thank you.
Thank you.
So the first students we're going to hear from are from the University of Minnesota. If they would come forward. Matt, Zach, Sarah, and Rachel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Matt Forsty. I'm an undergraduate student at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I'm a senior studying finance and math. I'm also the chair of the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition and a member of the Minnesota Student Association Executive Board, so involved in student government. I'm here with Zach, who I'll turn it over to in a bit to tell a, kind of a personal story. I really want to thank the chair and the committee for holding this hearing. This issue of safety affects tens of thousands of students in the metro area, and given these recent troubling violent incidents, in my opinion, the issue is as important as it has been in many years. So I'll talk briefly about how students have been affected on the U of M Twin Cities campus, and I'll talk about the work that the student government has been doing kind of in response to that, and a little bit of that was just mentioned by Vice Provost Brown Young. I am joined by a number of students in addition to those that are here at the table with me, a bunch around the back side. So there are a number of students concerned about this issue that took time away from finals week, final projects, and work obligations to come be here and show their support. So on a campus with, you know, more than 50,000 students, it's really rare that every single student on the campus is affected by a particular issue. You know, we're a really fragmented campus in many ways. We live in lots of different places and we do lots of different things. And for someone whose job it is to represent these students, this is the one issue, you know, one of a really just a few issues that I see every single student being affected by on a daily basis. And I've heard from students, and I think everyone in their homes and their classes and their communities has realized that this issue of safety, especially this fall, has become particularly important. I live in the Southeast Como neighborhood, which is fairly close to campus, but it is off the University of Minnesota campus. And just near my home, there have been a number of pretty unsettling incidents just near my block. And that includes a sexual assault in Van Cleef Park, which is just across the street from my house. A number of break-ins where people that I know have had things stolen from their house and their garage, and a number of muggings and robberies. So, you know, that experience that I've had just being close to these kind of incidents is not very unique. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the work of the Minnesota Student Association around this issue, because I think it's important. You know, as the folks that represent the students, we've seen it as our priority and responsibility from day one to be active on this issue and to work to engage the entire student body on realizing strategies to make our community safer. So as you heard a little bit from Chief Hessness and Vice Provost Brown Young, we've launched a comprehensive safety awareness campaign. And the launch of that included a student-led door knock, and we partnered with the University of Minnesota Police Department. Six or seven of their officers came with us, including Chief Hessness. And just a side note, you know, as you mentioned, Chair Bonoff, he's really wonderful to work with, and his corps of officers is really great to work with for students. But on that door knock, we spoke with thousands of students at their doors about strategies to stay safe. And we've been encouraging students to do three really simple things. Don't walk home alone at night. Don't let your friends walk home alone at night, which is perhaps even more important. And to use the resources that the university has, the 624 Walk, Safe Walk Service, and the Safe Ride Service, the Gopher Chauffeur, which was actually founded by our student government 5 or 6 years ago. And so we spoke to those thousands of students, and we're having students sign the safety pledge both in person and online actively today. You also heard about the Gopher Chauffeur. We recommended a policy change around the Gopher Chauffeur that it start operating on Thursdays and later on weekends. And that policy change was just implemented, as you heard. And we have encouraged students to engage with their elected officials in their communities. We held a letter writing event in our office just last week, and over 100 students came in and wrote letters to their city council members, or in some cases to their state representatives or state senators. So we thought that was a really good way for them to voice, you know, what they've been experiencing in their daily lives. So despite this work that we've done kind of in the short term, we think that the activity this fall really illustrates that there is a long-term need to address campus safety at the U. You know, certainly, you know, crime is down, as we know, but just, you know, this spike, we think, illustrates that there should be more that is done. And as a student just walking around campus, it's easy to notice some things that we could be doing better. In particular, the most obvious thing is lighting. The areas where the most crime is happening are not well-lit areas in the neighborhoods of Dinkytown or Marcy Homes or Como. And so I'd look forward to strategies that the university and the city can take on together to make those areas more well-lit. We also understand that cameras can be an effective crime deterrent. We have a lot on campus, but I think those off-campus neighborhoods that I mentioned would be areas where we could see more of that. You know, and has been talked about quite a bit at this hearing already, an evaluation of, you know, where we need patrols and officers given the changing physical environment of our campus is something that really needs to be done. And I do want to mention that while approaching these issues, it's really important to be aware of the effect that perception of racial profiling can have, especially at a university where diversity and inclusion are embedded into our mission. I just wanted to make sure to mention that because that's something that we've heard about. But the key there is the perception of racial profiling. I think Chief Hessness addressed that isn't really the case, but the perception does exist. And so lastly, you know, students, we understand that maintaining a safe campus is a shared responsibility. So making wise choices, holding each other accountable is what we expect of ourselves and our fellow students. And I think that our work as the Minnesota Student Association has advanced those principles. However, we do ask the university, the city, the county, you know, all the folks that are here and have a role in this conversation to work together, you know, in developing these long-term strategies to ensure a safer campus. And the last thing that I will say to those that might be working or might want to, you know, reach students on campuses and engage them and you know, educate them, work with us. We're more than happy to work with anyone that wants to do that, and we can help you reach students. So with that, I'll hand it over to Zach.
And Matt, you know, you have been a strong presence at our committees during this session and during the interim, so I thank you for being the voice of the university students and commend you on the leadership job that you're doing. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Zach Sharge. Thank you for holding this hearing, allowing me time to speak this morning. A little bit about myself, this is my second year at the University of Minnesota. I originally transferred from Hebrew University in Israel. I'm originally from Chicago. I'm currently a student senator and an MSA. I'm a member of the Alpha Epsilon Pi fraternity and an officer in Student Supporting Israel. And the crime has affected our student groups. I'll get to that a little bit later. I currently live at 1100 5th Street Southeast. So this is in the heart of Dinkytown. To give like a background information, we are 2 blocks away from Sanford Dorm. We are 2 blocks from Marcy Park. We are 2 blocks from downtown Dinkytown, which ends at 13th Avenue with Burrito Loco. And we are 2 blocks from the I-35 pedestrian bridge, which connects a lot of students to from both sides of the highway. And we're in a very, so 11th Avenue and 5th Street, we see a lot of traffic as our houses. We see, like, at night, when it's a lot nicer, there's a lot of foot traffic. It connects various parts of student living. It's an intersection of, like, various, like, organizations where students live. So it's a very important area. And we've had a lot of crime actually happen around us. We've had 2 incidents at 11th Avenue and 7th Street, one at 12th Avenue and 8th Street, another on 11th Avenue and 8th Street. So we're looking at 2 to 3 blocks away from our house. And all these happened on the weekends, and 2 of them happened in September, 1 in October, and 1 in November. It's a very consistency in the incidents. And one thing that we've seen affect us is, you know, like, what are we doing? So, for example, on November 24th, it was about between 3 and 3:30 a.m., I'm doing a round of the fraternity house, turning off lights. As I'm about to go to bed, and I see some activity happening on our lawn. So I grab a hammer, which I'm the house manager, so I have tools laying around the house, and I grab my hammer, go outside, and proceed to see what's happening, and I see 2 people, what looked like to be about tomorrow, a student, and yell, hold on my phone, so I'm calling the police. The two guys fled away towards the university, and the girl ran away, and I was able to gain more information. Just went back inside. It was a very weird incident, but that is just one example. I know my friends have almost gotten mugged. Like, one happened in the spring, and one happened a few weeks earlier, and they did not, but because they were very smart and aware, but not everyone's so lucky. So some of the effects it's had on us is how people are walking. I know we have been changing my routes. I've been staying inside. Currently the library is open 24 hours. I was going to go there last night, but instead I decided to stay in, partially due to the cold, and partially because I was probably leaving around 3:30, and that's not a good time to be leaving the library by yourself. When we have people over, we are now beginning to walk them, escort them back, but rather than just having one person walk them back, we're now having 2 or 3 people walk our friends back, which sometimes it's hard to find people at certain times of the day to do that. We have a lowered sense of overall security around our campus, and I know for our student supporting Israel group, a lot of our events are at night, and we have seen a decrease in attendance compared to last year, roughly around the time, which we can probably say is not due to the weather at this point, probably due to people just not feeling safe coming out to events at night, walking back around 10 to 11 p.m. that sometimes. And we've just been very aware of how we've been playing. We have, for our fraternity house, we have members who live on the other side of campus in Superblock. So what we've been doing is we've been driving them home, adjusting when we hold our events and how we do our events, and trying to make sure we can accommodate them as much as possible. But sometimes that's not always convenient. Again, our fraternity events have been having a lowered attendance due to the security concerns.
Well, thank you. And I would reiterate that we are here to combat that fear, not to succumb to it, and that we are going to support all of the community groups who are committed to serving to nip this, because we know that the university is a jewel and we're not going to lose our students. We're going to keep you safe.
Thank you.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, good morning, and thank you to everyone in attendance for showing support, especially Senator Bonoff for recognizing the urgency of the situation and responding so thoughtfully and quickly. My name is Sarah Gottlieb. I am a senior at the University of Minnesota.
And my name is Rachel Sadowski, and I'm a sophomore at the U as well. Sarah and I created a petition to increase campus safety that has received nearly 4,000 signatures to date. The purpose of our petition is to serve as a voice for concerned students, parents, faculty, and the University of Minnesota community. Safety is an issue for every single one of us on campus, and we all want and deserve to feel safe in the place that we live and attend school.
Our studies should be our first priority. We're doing our best to be aware of our surroundings and to maintain our personal safety, but concern for our security on a daily basis has interrupted the flow of our normal lives. It's more than simply a matter of distracted walking, walking alone, or misbehavior. It's a matter of students becoming targets from people outside of campus. Just this past Sunday, an armed robbery was attempted at 4 p.m., 3 blocks from our home. These crimes have gotten violent, and no one is immune. Hiding our phones is not enough. As Chief Hessness mentioned, it's assumed we have them. When we're walking home from the library with our backpacks, it's assumed that we have a laptop as well. Walking in groups also is not enough. Again, like Chief Hessness mentioned, groups have become targets as well, and there's little, if nothing else, nothing more a group can do than an individual when faced with a gun. Lastly, carrying pepper spray is not enough, as a good friend of ours this past weekend had her pepper spray turned against her as she was walking home. We no longer feel safe walking outside.
And things have changed just this year. Crime has spiked this fall, and the incidents have become more frequent and severe. The measures being taken to combat this so far are certainly helpful. Sarah and I are both employees of the Gopher Chauffeur, a U of M service that provides free rides to students Thursdays through Sundays from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Just this past weekend, I worked as a dispatcher for the service. I can say firsthand that at times the wait can be up to 2.5 hours for a ride. During my shift, I never put the phone down, yet I missed at least 80 calls simply because of busy phone lines. The 624 Walk Security Escort Service is a great resource that can certainly be better utilized by students on campus. But these alone are not enough. For a campus of over 80,000 undergraduate and graduate students, it is not practical to rely on walking with an escort everywhere we go, especially when just walking short distances. Yet last week, our close friend was a victim of an attempted abduction in a well-lit area while walking less than 4 blocks. It is also not practical to say that we shouldn't walk from our homes to the library with our laptops and our backpacks when we are trying to get our schoolwork done. Our friend had his wallet, cell phone, and laptop taken at gunpoint on his own porch as he came home from work at 3 a.m. on a Tuesday. We feel targeted, and we do not feel safe.
With all that said, we ask that the University of Minnesota Police Department and the Minneapolis Police Department please continue to work together to combat this crime, both on campus and, more importantly, in the surrounding neighborhoods where so many students live. Whatever we're doing, we need to do more. We understand that some statistics may say violent crime is down, and that we may say that this crime uptick is not unique to the University of Minnesota, but we need to hold ourselves to a higher standard. We simply cannot continue to let these crimes happen. We need to feel safe. We need more police. We need more lights. We need more cameras. We need to prevent these crimes before they happen, and if they do happen, we need to catch these perpetrators.
This is why we are here today, and this is why we need your help. Again, we sincerely thank you all for your commitment to safety on campus, and we look forward to working together to make strides toward a safer university.
You women have been a powerful voice. I thank you for your efforts. I thank you for your tenacity in making sure that this issue is in the forefront. And so with anybody who's come before us today or who is hearing that we're having this discussion, I would ask you to submit, following this hearing, specific actions that you see that we could take. So, for example, obviously the gopher chauffeur wait is unacceptable. So that would be an example. If you could give us in writing specifically, and we'll make sure to, I'm sure the university understands that those are issues and is committed to taking action. But I think it's helpful, given we are here having this forum, that we can collate your suggestions and your recommendations. So
thank you so
thank
much.
You very much. Your voices have been heard.
Thank you. Oh,
Madam Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Oh, I just wanted to echo exactly what you said. Thank you very much for articulating the issues, the problems, the experiences, and really drawing our attention as leaders to what you're experiencing.
Thank you. So at this point, we haven't rushed any of our testifiers, but it is about 11:20, and we had originally thought we'd go to 11. Now I'm thinking we'll have a hard stop at 12. So I will ask those who are still here to testify to do your very best not to repeat what's been said. We are grateful for everyone's presence, but we ask the remaining people to do your very best to be succinct. And with that, and Councilmember Hofstad, the Minneapolis group did come to the table, but if time permitting, well, given this is your area and you have so much experience and knowledge, we'll make sure to get a couple words from you too. Okay, so next we have Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. We have St. Paul College, Metro State University, and MCTC, if you could come. Good morning, President. We just saw you yesterday when we had the privilege of touring your wonderful college.
Glad to host you yesterday. It was our honor and privilege.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, honorable committee members. My name is Rasul Dasko.
Madam Chair.
And could you pull the microphone closer? Thank you.
Better now?
Yes.
Start. Good morning, everyone. Madam Chair, honorable committee members. My name is Rasul Dasmos. I'm the president of St. Paul College, one of 31 colleges and universities within the Minnesota State Colleges and University System. With me today, I have Mr. Sean Hamilton, Vice President of Finance and Operation, who will provide you some talking point about the safety and security of our students and our institution. We're grateful to you and the committee for giving a special attention, particularly to safety, security of our students at our higher education institutions, where these institutions give each and every one of our students a safe, secure sanctuary to gain knowledge, skills, and the how to cope with a complex world. At St. Paul College, our mission is education for employment, education for life. We seek to create an educational environment where our students can succeed and achieve their educational and career goals and dreams. To fulfill our mission, our college is committed to creating and maintaining a safe, welcoming, engaging, and secure environment. Now I want to turn over our presentation to Mr. Sean Hamilton.
Thank you. Mr. Hamilton.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you so much for having us here today. St. Paul College can best be characterized as a growing urban community and technical college. Our enrollment has grown 88% over the last 13 years, from just over 2,500 full-year equivalent students to almost 4,800 full-year equivalent students. Last year, St. Paul College had 11,870 credit and non-credit students by headcount. We are located between the Capitol Building and the St. Paul Cathedral on 27 acres of land, and our operations are 520,000 square feet of space. The college has no residential facilities. All of our students commute to and from campus during our operational hours from 6:30 in the morning to 11 o'clock at night, Monday through Friday. We also are operating from 7:30 in the morning to 4 in the afternoons on Saturdays. Given St. Paul College's dramatic enrollment growth, The college renewed its security reviewed its security needs and determined that it needed to create a new public safety department in 2010. The department currently consists of one director of public safety, three public safety officers, and eight student dispatchers. To prevent crime, the public safety department completes daily patrols around campus, offers an escort service to students, employees, and visitors, uses an access control system, uses closed-circuit security cameras that record activity around campus, deploys emergency blue phones in the parking lot, and alerts the St. Paul Police Department of suspicious behavior during the campus's hours of operation. To further prevent crime, campus administrators walk around the buildings regularly. St. Paul College's Public Safety Department also investigates possible crimes in coordination with the St. Paul Police Department through evidence and report sharing. This partnership is very important for us and for the safety of our students. St. Paul College takes each security incident very seriously. In the most recent campus security report submitted to the U.S. Department of Education in the fall of 2013, alleged criminal activities on campus decreased from 12 in 2010 to 4 in 2012. We've had zero arrests in 2010 and 2012 and just one arrest for drug law violation in 2011. We are very fortunate to have a close working relationship with the St. Paul Police Department to prevent crime and investigate suspicious activities thoroughly and quickly with the goal of keeping students, employees, and visitors on campus safe and secure. As St. Paul College continually improves its public safety capabilities, we recently reviewed and updated our crisis intervention plan and our emergency operations plan. We recently did a lockdown drill of this plan, and students, staff, and faculty were involved in providing assistance to make sure that that drill operated correctly. We also were able to test communications and emergency response procedures. Communication is critical to creating and maintaining safety and security for our St. Paul College community. We use multiple notification methods in an ongoing effort to communicate relevant information in a timely manner. In the event of an emergency, St. Paul College uses Blackboard Connect to phone and email students, faculty, and staff. We also send public safety alerts via email to the campus community to communicate potential and ongoing safety concerns.
With that said, I also want to recognize Mr. Thomas Berg, who is the Director of Public Safety, in the audience with us. In summary, our college's mission is to provide an exceptional, extraordinary education to our students. Our mission requires a safe and secure environment, and we're committed to creating and maintaining this type of environment for our students, faculty, staff, community members who we partner with at St. Paul College, as well as partnering with St. Paul Police Department and other local law enforcement agencies as appropriate when needed.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the job that you do to keep your students safe. So, Mr. Maeda?
Yeah, Madam Chair and members of the committee, you've heard a variety of common trends, I think, throughout the morning.
Yeah, so thank you. If you would just tell us what was new.
I'm going to try to delete most of mine.
Not that we don't appreciate what you're doing.
I recognize that. But it's beneficial to hear a lot of the common trends from institution to institution. And fortunately...
And can you say your name for the record?
Yes, it's Thomas Maeda.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Fortunately, the crime at Metropolitan State University has declined like many of the institutions, like many of the police departments have reported as well. One thing that we've done on campus, I think, that helped to really reduce the crime is we've taken an old process called predictive policing that many police departments, I think, have moved off to the side. It's had some connections with profiling, but we've really redeveloped this predictive policing. We're looking at habits, patterns, trends, and we're fortunate to be able to predict the likelihood of an event occurring on campus. We're a smaller non-residential campus with a public library. Most of the incidents occur within the public library. But that predictive policing training with our safety officers and our work-study safety students, I think, has played a great role in reducing that crime. One of the other things that we've done on campus to reduce crime is networking and communications. We're required by the Department of Education for a timely notification. We do that. But above and beyond that, we're constantly putting out notices, whether it's seasonal, whether it's academic-based, whether it's a semester, about trends on campus, about patterns, about identifying individuals who could likely be the next victim. and I think that's really been successful for us. One of the challenges that we've had is when we've had crimes and we've identified specific individuals, we've really struggled with investigations from the police department. We've been struggled with moving investigations forward with the city attorney. Case in point, we had a recent incident on campus right in front of a camera. Again, someone placed down their phone. Someone came by, put a piece of paper over the phone, walked with the safety officer right in front of them. This was up on a counter. And when they left, they took the phone. Fortunately, we were able to identify the individual. The police were involved. The street officer spoke with that person. We had their name, passed it on to the investigator. And it was determined that because the individual says as they left the building, they gave it to someone who said they lost a phone, that career criminal with 31 convictions over the last several years isn't going to be charged. So that's one of the challenges that we're facing on campus is when we identify individuals, it's hard to step back and determine where they're going to go. One of the final things I want to talk about is the student victims themselves. There's a lot that we can do to help promote safety on campus. It's all of our priority. One of the things we've really done on campus is when we identify the victims, we have a network on campus. Our dean of student, our care team will reach out to that student. The one who just had that phone taken has had 3 or 4 meetings in my office. But it's working with that student to make sure that they can still fulfill their academic need and address the emotional scars that are happening as a victim. So thank you.
Thank you very much. And you highlight an important point because when you've been violated as a victim, then you do need that wraparound service and you do need that care and attention. So thank you for making sure that that is present in today's conversation. And I'm sorry that happened with regard to prosecuting that incident. And sometimes it's when you say those sorts of things on the record, then that message is heard. So we hear you. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to be here this morning. My name is Kirk Schmidt. I'm the Director of Public Safety for Minneapolis Community and Technical College. Of course, many of you have visited our school recently, and I think the event went really well. We are a 2-year non-residential campus located in downtown Minneapolis. We have 14,000 students who come to our campus each day. Mr. Maeda, his Minneapolis campus, Metropolitan State University, is also located on our campus, and we work in tandem on several events that occur on our campus. Of course, we're all MinSCU. MinSCU has put a concerted effort into improving campus safety. We have a really, really improved safety office through the system office, and that has helped all of us with resources and opportunities. So we really appreciate the whole system's efforts in trying to provide resources for us. Of course, are a state agency. Our campus public safety officers, there's 8 full-time officers, 1 part-time officer, and we have on-call officers. They are state of Minnesota employees. Highly trained, highly dedicated to providing effective service to our customers, our faculty, staff, and students, and they do a really excellent job. We have excellent technological resources on campus. We maintain over 200 cameras. We have card access control. We have a wireless security systems. We have code blue phones on campus. We have many resources for students, faculty, and staff to be able to contact us and provide us information. The real critical piece, though, to all of this is working together. Whether it be the security directors amongst the state, private and public colleges. We have an organization called IACLIA. We have a Minnesota chapter. We meet regularly. We talk about incidents. We talk about trends. We talk about strategies to prevention. Several of my counterparts are here today supporting us. And we have a really close-knit, tight group. We also work closely, of course, with the Minneapolis Police Department. I also worked at the University of St. Thomas from 98 to 2001 in their public safety department. I know the St. Paul Department is excellent. St. Paul Police Department is excellent. We've had many incidents with them where we've resolved quickly and timely, and these law enforcement agencies do an outstanding job, and they work very closely with us. There's no separation, in my opinion, at all. We have close ties. Of course, being a commuter campus, we have some of the benefits of not having residential housing, right, which sometimes translates into crime stats and higher numbers. From 2010 to 2012, we had 1 forcible sex offense on campus, 1 robbery, and 1 aggravated assault. This past year, we had one sexual assault, and we've had one robbery. And the robbery was something to where it happened middle of the day. Student was sitting in a very populated student center. The person was approached, did the right thing, gave up their belongings. A weapon was implied, never displayed. The person subsequently left the campus. We have very good video footage and pictures of the particular suspect. We are currently still working with the Minneapolis Police Department to find out who the perpetrator was. But they were very responsive to our needs on the campus, helpful to the student, along with our student resources as well. The sexual assault was an incident to where two people were known to each other. They ended up in a bathroom together. Eventually, the woman decided that this wasn't a good situation. She was able to get out of the bathroom without any resistance from the male, reported the incident to us, and Minneapolis police came in and made an arrest. So in both the situations, the students acted appropriately, and I believe that's through training and education. I think we have a really, really smart campus community when it comes to dealing with situations. And even though we have very few Part 1 crime incidents on our campus, the two situations we had this year, disheartening, but I think the students handled both of those situations very well. We have a community effort on our campus called Green Dot, which is basically proactive bystander training. We're trying to get people to understand that even though you're a bystander in a situation, there are several different options that you can partake in and do, even if it's making a simple phone call or talking to the person who was involved afterwards, or just get involved. So thank you for your time today, and I think that the campuses in the state of Minnesota are safe campuses. I have a high school senior this year who's going to be going off to college next year, and I no hesitation sending her to any campus here in the state of Minnesota or anywhere else.
Well, thank you. Yes, Scott. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I see we have St. Thomas coming up next. So quick question maybe to both, which is how much do you have in common with the issues with the Minneapolis St. Thomas campus, which is just a block down, Harmon? And do you have communication and interaction with St. Thomas security folks?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, of course we have communication amongst the campuses. Many times we'll share security alerts, mm-hmm. and we'll share information. As a matter of fact, when the University of Minnesota sent out their security alert about their incident, we sent that out to our campus as well to keep them informed. So, yes, we share information on a constant basis.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I believe next is we have Felicia Hamilton representing the Minscu students. Ms. Hamilton.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Good afternoon.
And members of the committee. For the record, my name is Felicia Hamilton. I'm a second-year community development student at Minneapolis Community and Technical College. Thank you for initiating this important conversation on campus security. First, let me start by saying I enjoy attending a school that is centrally located in a vibrant urban area. The campus diversity, community connections, and the civically engaged student body are some of the primary reasons that I chose to enroll at MCTC. However, there are some heightened safety concerns that come with the downtown Minneapolis campus location. As a student, I deserve to learn to have a safe learning environment and want to ensure that my fellow students also feel safe on campus. My concerns about campus safety led to me getting involved with the school club, Feminist Organizing Change, and Women's Response to Violence. In both these groups, students work directly with the excellent on-campus public safety committee staff and to address some of the safety issues that are a concern at our school. In addition to raising the awareness on domestic violence prevention at our campus through the Clothesline Project, we have been working with the Green Dot Program to teach students different ways to defend themselves against violence as victims and bystanders. These efforts were supported and produced with the help of MCTC's public safety staff. To continue to foster a learning environment for all of our students, I would like to see an increased interaction with the student body, public safety staff, and the greater community to begin a dialogue on how we can all play a role in crime reduction. Additionally, students would benefit from the development of new channels to report suspicious behavior on our campus, such as safety forums that engage all the students to learn and to become crime stoppers, emergency phones inside and outside of our campus area, increased presence of our safety officers, and an anonymous phone number or email service for students to report crime so that they are not in fear of retaliation. Again, thank you for starting this important conversation and for the opportunity to speak with you today. I look forward to continuing to work with this committee, our campus administrators, and my fellow students to ensure that all students are able to learn in a safe environment.
Well, thank you. And if you do have any further suggestions, again, if you submit it to us, we'll make sure to disperse those among the MNSCU administrators. Yeah. Next, we have Dave Mewison? And I really butchered that, right? Is Jesse Cashman here as well?
Okay. Yeah, Jesse's joining us. Thank you.
Okay, great. And if you would, just, you know, yes. Keep your remarks.
I'm going to.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Senate Committee. My name is Dan Mewison. Director of Public Safety at the University of St. Thomas.
Oh, I apologize. We had your name wrong.
That's okay. My co-director, Jesse Cashman from Augsburg, is also joining us today.
Thank you.
Give you some history of myself. I've been in campus law enforcement for over 20 years. I started at the University of St. Thomas, left, went to a Concordia University for a number of years, and then returned back to the St. Thomas as the director for the last 11-plus years. So I have a very strong understanding of the St. Paul and Minneapolis community. I've grown up here, and we at St. Thomas share the vision and the concern with all the members of the testimonies today and our students. We are very concerned about campus safety, as is our coworkers and the individuals that I work daily with. Very professional teams. The police departments, the local sheriff's agencies, our fellow universities, we work very closely in tight relationships and partnerships. I have a whole list of things, but most of it would be redundant, so I'm going to change this up and try to be very quick for you.
Thank you.
The University of St. Thomas enrolls 10,000 students on two campuses. We're both in St. Paul and in Minneapolis, so we get a flavor of both sides of it. We employ 48 officers, 48 full-time employees on both campuses. We're 24 hours a day. Uh-huh. We, too, have the escorts, and we have the blue lights, and we have the cameras and a lot of technology advancements that go with these campuses and go with the expectation of providing a safe environment for our students. Clearly, we are driven to provide a safe environment. We work in partnership with the local law enforcement, much greater than one might expect. We have regular meetings. We plan for special events, for perhaps for speakers that are coming on high profile. Well, when we have incidents such as we're discussing here, we'll get together and strategize on how our resources can be better utilized and how we can work in a coordinated effort to reduce our crime. We believe on our campuses and the local private colleges that we all have very safe campuses. We worry about the neighborhoods as well as everybody else and what's directly off of the campuses. We have 6,300 resident students on or in our neighborhood on the St. Paul campus, so that's quite a community. Additionally, we work very closely with our neighborhood committees. WestNAC is one of the groups that we meet at the beginning of each semester, and we try to coordinate with the police departments and the city attorney's office and a number of different agencies to also improve and work on quality of life issues in the surrounding areas of the campus. That goes greatly to reduce other Part 1 offenses as well, so it's a very strategic move in how we perform and how we work together. We are student-based and focused. We do training with our students. We're at orientations. We develop videos. We're online. We use social media. We have tip lines. Any access in any way we can reach out to our student body and community members, we will activate it and utilize it and try to get the message out to our students and community. And I say students, but it is community-based. The safety of all these institutions and all the areas is everybody's responsibility. We need to work closely on educating and programming in that we all take responsibility of seeing something and saying something. If there's something out of the ordinary, we should be addressing it, and there should be avenues for you to be able to contact people and get that message to us so we can work on it. As I look through my notes, I don't want to go over redundant material. So I am going to say our bottom line is we at St. Thomas are very proud of our relationships and working relationships with St. Paul Police and the other colleges, our students, our families, our parents, our commuter base. We work very diligently on building those relationships, and we believe we have a very strong and safe campus, as do I know the other members of our Minnesota Private College Council's directors. So I'll turn it over to...
And I will say that the shortness of your remarks does not in any way reflect our lack of appreciation for the safe campus you provide, because we do notice that, and we appreciate the work you do.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
yeah, thank
that.
You.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senate Committee. As you said, my name is Jesse Cashman. I'm the Director of Public Safety and Risk Management at Augsburg College in the heart of the Cedar Riverside community. Obviously, we have been affected by some of these trends in our area as well, and we're taking a lot of the same precautions, as well as the preventative measures that Dan talked about, that the chief from the U talked about. We have all of these items on our campus, too. We're looking at LED lighting. We're looking at we have phones on campus. We offer escorts 24/7. We offer them two blocks away from campus. We'll give rides to the light rail, things like that. But we also meet with our community members. We also sit down with our Cedar Riverside community and meet with their safety committee to let them know that we support them and that we want to hear what their trends are and notice those things. We also invite the transit police into our campus once a month to have lunch with us. We invite the U of M campus to come in. We invite Minneapolis police to come in. We meet with our other directors that are in the area to make sure that we're sharing information, that we're utilizing our resources to the best of our ability. And our main focus is our community and our students, and to make sure that they can get to and from the areas they need to go to, focus on their studies, and feel comfortable in the environment that they're in. So in an effort not to be redundant, I want to thank you guys for having this conversation. This is probably the most important part of it, in spreading the word on prevention efforts, on safety tips, on making sure that it's something that's on, number one on our mind when we're going out into the community, and that we're encouraging others to practice safety behavior as well. So to be honest with you, this is probably one of the greatest things that's going to happen, I think, as far as law enforcement. We can't generate these types of discussions as directors, so we appreciate that you guys brought this forward and that we have an opportunity to make safety a concern and bring it to the forefront for our colleges and university students. Thank you.
And that is why we did it. So thank you very much. Senator Dibble.
Thanks. And are you working with the hospitals as well across the street?
Yes. We work with the director at Fairview, talk about their issues and trends as well. We do things like share camera views. We talk about sharing pictures. If we have an incident in our area, we usually find out that we're being victimized by the same individual. So it's very helpful to share that information, and it helps us apprehend those individuals even quicker.
Sure. Thanks.
Thank you. So finally, I would ask Ms. Palmer, Mr. Pratt, and Councilmember Hofstede to come to the table, and we're going to wrap up by 12, so you're doing good.
Thank you. morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
And members of the committee, my name is Caroline Palmer. I'm the staff attorney at the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. I am going to try to keep my remarks shorter, but we do have a copy of the testimony that we can
thank
provide.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So just to let you know, MnCASA is a nonprofit organization. We are located in St. Paul. We represent over 70 sexual assault advocacy programs throughout the state. Many of these programs do have campuses in their areas and provide services to victims of sexual assault in those areas. MnCASA is also involved with the Sexual Assault Response Team Reproach, and this is organized through our Sexual Violence Justice Institute. And just to give you a little more information about this, ASART is comprised of representatives from local law enforcement, prosecution, social service, medical, and advocacy personnel, and all of them are dedicated to improving the response to sexual violence in the community. If there is a campus located in the service area where there's a SART, we hope to involve somebody from campus security or the administration so they are part of developing local protocol, sharing information, and working to come up with solutions. MnCASA receives federal funding from the Office on Violence Against Women to promote the SART approach. We are the technical assistance provider for the entire country, and we're hoping that this information may be useful as you're going forward with your work here. Many of the SARTs that we work with around the country are also located in campus areas, and the county SARTs that have campuses in their service areas in Minnesota include Hennepin, Ramsey, Winona, South St. Louis, Lyon, Beltrami, Rice, Olmsted, and Itasca. So it covers a lot of our campuses. As you heard earlier from Commander Reed, an example of a recent success story is in Ramsey County, where the SART has been actively engaged over the past couple of years in ongoing training and communications with the many public and private colleges and universities in the area. And they are definitely having a great time improving the response with all responders in the community. I think the one thing I would really like to add here is that SART members do have a lot of combined knowledge to help train campus personnel, especially as they work to carry out all the new requirements under the Violence Against Women Act, which was just reauthorized in 2013, and part of it includes the Campus Save Act. The Campus Save Act is largely
so, ma'am,
about response. Sorry, and keep it.
Yeah.
I'll wrap
so,
it up.
And we do appreciate your work.
Sure.
Thank you.
Can I just say one more thing and then wrap it up? So I think the one thing we would just like to add is that if there's any way that MnCASA can work to come together to convene campuses to help with training or with sharing with best practices with SARTs, we're more than happy to do so.
And do you have a relationship with the University of Minnesota and with the Metro campuses?
We have a representative from the Aurora Center, which is the Sexual Assault Advocacy Center at the University of Minnesota, on the Hennepin SART team, and some of the other SART teams have those types of relationships.
There's too. Anything that you want us to pass along, we will take your testimony, and we will make sure to do that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Councilmember Hofstad.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for members of the committee for the opportunity to address the committee and for holding this public hearing. I'm Councilmember Diane Hofstad, representing the City of Minneapolis 3rd Ward, and have been very engaged with the University of Minnesota, primarily around the University District Alliance. The University District Alliance was an outgrowth of our relationship and discussion with the TCF Stadium. And as a result of that, we formed the University District Alliance. That relationship involves the neighborhoods all in Southeast, the City of Minneapolis, the 2nd and 3rd Wards, and, of course, various departments. And as a result of that, we formed a ongoing relationship. We meet quarterly to discuss issues such as public safety. I want to say that we've had a series of meetings recently around this concern that we share with you mutually, and our intent is to continue our robust discussion. The result of our work around the district alliance has been to forge stronger partnerships, not only with the City of Minneapolis, but in particular our public safety strategies. Chief Hessness and our various inspectors have been instrumental in developing strategies. And the intent, of course, is to continue those, but even more robustly, as has been mentioned by Vice President Wheelock that we continue those relationships. So I just want to thank this legislative body for developing this and approving the University District Alliance as a method of us having a vehicle to have ongoing discussions. At the public hearing today, I see even more opportunities in which we can broaden those relationship with our other partners and use the University District Alliance as a blueprint for how we can even enjoy greater relationships around public safety and other issues. So thank you very much.
And thank you, Councilmember Hofstad, for your service. And while you won't be serving in this role, we expect you to be a strong public servant in the future and welcome your counsel and your advice as somebody with deep expertise in this area.
Thank you.
Mr. Pratt,
Madam
we get
Chair.
To wrap it up. 2 minutes.
Excellent. Madam Chair, committee members, I've been a member of the public university community for over 14 years in various roles, but I'm, you know, so I'm speaking in those regards and not on behalf of my institution. I believe the biggest change that has happened over the last 5 years has been the changing communication. Social media awareness from news organizations has really made the perception that the problem has changed greater than what the statistics have shown that it has changed. That being said, I think that there's a few things that we need to do in order to help our members of our community. One is, as we have all done here, is not denying that there is an issue. The goal is to have zero violent crimes, zero crime, and while that's an admirable goal, we always need to work towards that and keep moving, even in times when crime is down, not just in times when we've seen a spike. I believe that we need to make our community members more aware of their surroundings. Situational awareness is not just knowing where you go, but knowing the people around you and knowing what's happening around you. We need to encourage students and our members of the community to have a plan. If something happens, the time when it's happening is not the time to be thinking about what you are going to do. You need to be ready ahead of time and know what's and be prepared for those situations. We also need to enable people to protect themselves. By whether it be being able to get to a phone to make a call, whether it be having a device for protection or working with other people in their community, we need to make sure that they are able to protect themselves. And lastly, wrapping up, this issue isn't an issue that's unique to the metro area. This is a statewide issue and a national-wide issue. As I said, the communication makes us all a much closer family, so hopefully we can, I was told that this conversation may include a greater Minnesota area, and I'm hoping and looking forward to that conversation with all of our higher education institutions.
Thank you for making the trip down here. And I thank you to everyone who's here and who's tuning into this, because I know it took a tremendous amount of work to have people organized to be able to contribute here today. So I thank the University of Minnesota, MinSCU, the private colleges, and all of the students and the public and my colleagues for making time in their day to join us for this important conversation. And finally, our staff, because without our staff, we couldn't do this work. So Dave Kornacki, our committee administrator, Maya Weidman, our fiscal analyst, John Fuller, our attorney, and Sean Oyes, my legislative assistant. Thank you. And with that, the committee is adjourned.
Hey there.
Thanks. Thank you.
Oh, hey. Hey. How are you? Hey. Keeping things under control in East Harriet.